I call this meeting to order on this lovely Monday evening. My name is Myron Fox, and it's my privilege to be your moderator on this 2012 annual town meeting. I declare that a quorum is now present. Let us begin by showing our appreciation for the sacrifice of the men and women in our armed services who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan or are serving there now, particularly those with Sudbury connections. Let us also remember the words of then Captain, now Major, Dennis Ford, a Sudbury resident who did serve in both Iraq and Afghanistan, when he addressed this town meeting several years ago. Quote, "There are still many places in the world that you cannot debate openly and participate in the democratic process. Although we as a society may not all agree on every issue, we do have the freedom to debate openly and participate in democracy. My fellow Sudbury residents, you are the legislative body that will help shape the future here in Sudbury. Let me remind you to be civil in your debates and fair-minded in your votes, as well as cherish the tradition of freedom we all share here in the United States," end quote. We now ask you to rise and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. As you know, each year we have a Pledge of Allegiance led at the annual town meeting by a student from LS, Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. This year, that individual selected for the honor is Paul Tochi. Paul is a senior at Lincoln Sudbury, be attending West Point, be playing for the West Point men's lacrosse team next year, senior captain and four-year varsity letter recipient on the varsity lacrosse team, one-year letter recipient on the varsity football team, selected multiple times as Lincoln Sudbury scholar, current grade 6 youth lacrosse coach, religious retreat leader at Our Lady of Fatima Catholic Church in town, spent the past 4 summers and worked weekends renovating low-income housing in Fitchburg. Paul.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Be seated, please. The certified free cash, according to town accountant Barbara Chisholm, is now $674,860. I have examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the office's return of service, and confirmation of timely mailing of the warrant to residents. I recognize Selectman Chairman O'Brien for a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of the annual town meeting, the office's return of service notice, and the individual articles of the warrant.
So moved, Mr. Moderator.
Does that receive a second? Second. It does. All those in favor, raise your cards. All those opposed, raise your cards. It is unanimous. Thank you. I'd now like to introduce town officials. We'll start on the stage. Please raise, could each official please raise your hand when your name is called for our new town meeting attendees. To my right, Rosemary Harvell, town clerk. To her right, assistant town clerk, Layla Frank. To my left, selectman John Drabinski, newly elected. Next to him, Lawrence O'Brien. And in the middle is Bob Hardy. Mr. O'Brien is the chair. Town manager is Maureen Valente. Town accountant down here is Barbara Chisholm. Assistant town accountant, Robin Porcella. Director of assessing, Maureen Hafner. Town council up here on the stage, Paul Kenny. At the view graph, we have Mary McCormick, executive assistant to the town manager. Patty Golden, supervisor of the Office of Selectmen. Elaine Jones, who manages the town's legal department. Mark Thompson, our technology administrator. The finance committee, all the way down on the left, on the stage, Bob Jacobson, Jamie Gossels, Doug Cohen, Jim Rao, Bill Nealon Jr., Mark Manassian, Joan Carlton, vice chair, Jim Rayo is the chair. Chuck Woodard. And not sitting on the Finance Committee tonight is Bob Stein due to illness. Assistant Town Manager, Marianne Bilodeau. Treasurer, Collector, and Finance Director, Andrea Turkelson. Did I miss anybody? Apparently not. Coffee and snacks are in the area where you checked in tonight. LS informs me that there can be no food or drink except water in this auditorium, but you may consume them outside the auditorium. Thanks go for the coffee and snacks. Go to the Foundation for Educators at LS, which is FELS. It is a nonprofit organization that awards enrichment grants to LS faculty and staff to pursue their professional and personal interests and their passions. I have a few announcements. Please register your interest in serving on a board or committee in town by going online at www.sudbury.ma.us or calling the Selectman's Office, 978-639-3382. Please consider how you might lend your talents to town government. Some committee memberships do not require a great deal of time, but all provide valuable contributions. I've just been given an announcement from the Boston Red Sox to Mrs. Jones of Sudbury, if she is here. Could you please pick up your husband and your 8 sons at Fenway Park? They are beating the Red Sox 8-0 at the top of the first inning. Bathrooms are located across the hall from the auditorium. Voters must be physically present in the hall at town meeting to raise their cards and cast their vote. No one may raise a card to cast the vote of another voter. There are materials on the tables where you entered about various warrant articles. There are also extra warrants in case you forgot the one that was mailed to your home. And I have them here at the podium, and we'll have them delivered to you by the Boy Scouts. If you're not on an aisle and need a warrant, please raise your card and keep it raised, and we will have the Boy Scouts deliver you a warrant. Wow, this is a good group. Feel free to raise your hand. Can you give this young lady here a warrant, please? The warrants are up here. Anybody else need a warrant? Over there. Can you come over here and grab a few? Anybody else need a warrant? We got plenty up here. Over here. You got them? Could you keep raising your hand, please, so he knows where to deliver it? Thank you. Patty, who has the handout for the finance? Okay. What's that? Okay, can you have the Boy Scouts pick them up and give them out to everybody, please? There's been some changes on Article 4, the budget, from what you saw. They were made as late as 5:30 tonight. And so I just got mine, and we're trying to get one to you. We have about 200, and which is fine because we seem to have just under 200 people here. So, Patty, if you'll give those out to the Boy Scouts, just have them passing at the first row, and they'll send it all the way down the aisle. And we'll keep going while you're doing that. If present, we have 2 state senators, Jamie Eldridge and Susan Fargo. If either one of them are here, please come forward to be recognized. No. We also have our state representative here, Tom Conroy. You want to come forward, Tom? And Tom would like to make a few presentations.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. It is my privilege and honor to recognize and applaud 3 very distinguished individuals tonight, and I'd like them to come up and join me if they could. Susan Uliano, Jeff Beeler, and Mark Collins. Each one of these individuals have been for several years dedicated members of school committees. Jeff and Susan, the Sudbury Public Schools Committee, and Mark on the LS School Committee. And I just want to take a moment to thank them for their public service over the many years. Susan, as many of you know, is an extraordinarily level-headed, balanced, and rational individual on all matters, and she has a cheerfulness that I know I and many others find extraordinarily infectious as she advocates on behalf of excellence in the school system here in Sudbury. Jeff, similarly, a dedicated, committed, and passionate advocate on behalf of excellence in the Sudbury schools, with a true focus on the future of our children here in the community. And Mark, a son of Sudbury, an LS grad himself, and in fact on the LS building committee, is someone who helped turn this building that we are in this evening into a reality. Indeed, as an LS committee member on the school front, he has demonstrated an institutional history, a legal expertise, and a standard of excellence in education that is unparalleled. And I know that when I came into office 6 years ago, each one of them were serving in the roles that they are retiring from now, and I learned a ton from them. They're all extraordinary in their knowledge, in their perspective, and in their willingness to assist me and so many others help the Sudbury school systems be the best that they can be. So I have three citations here, one for each of them from the Massachusetts House of Representatives, and I won't go through reading all of those, but let's just say that the entire Massachusetts House of Representatives body finds these individuals of extraordinary commitment, valor, and dedication, and I just want to say thank you on behalf of all of my colleagues at the State House. So, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
Thank you all. I now recognize Selectman Hardy for a resolution in memory of those citizens who have served the town and passed away during this past year. Mr. Hardy will not read each committee that each person has served on, but they will be on the view graph in your front, so feel free in front, so feel free to look at those, please. Mr. Hardy.
In memoriam resolution, whereas the town of Sudbury has enjoyed the blessing of those in the community who gave their time and talent to enrich the quality of life in our town, and whereas this past year has seen several of its citizens and employees who have rendered public service and civic duty pass from among us. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the town of Sudbury extend its heartfelt sympathy to the families of these persons and recognize their service and dedication to the community. Francis J. Avery, 1961-2012. Donald A. Bacon, 1925-2011. Kenneth L. Briggs, 1961-2011. Armando J. Cara, 1935-2011. Robert G. Curtis, 1931-2011. Barbara O'Toole Fitzgerald, 1921-2011. Robert A. Gottberg, 1935-2011. John J. LaCroix, 1918-2011. Patricia M. Linton, 1936-2011. John S. McKinnon, Jr., 1956-2012. Patrick J. McDermott, 1923-2011. Helen J. McNally, 1932-2011. Robert G. Mugford, 1928-2011. Elizabeth W. Newton, 1927-2011. Avis Price, 1925-2011. Thomas Polchowski, 1938-2011. John O. Rome, Jr., 1915-2011. Shirley Ressler, 1927-2011. Ian Ryrie, 1949-2011. Janet Hunter Smith, 1922-2012. Eileen D. Welpley, 1921-2012. Virginia White, 1921-2011. Anthony Zarella, 1929-2011. And be it further resolved that the town of Sudbury, in town meeting assembled, record for posterity in the minutes of this meeting its recognition and appreciation for their contributions to our community. And be it further resolved that the town of Sudbury, in town meeting assembled, record for posterity in the minutes of this meeting its recognition and appreciation for their contributions to our community.
Thank you. Now, please turn to Article 1. For many years, it has been tradition at the annual town meeting to honor one of our citizens who has performed valuable service for the town by asking him or her to make the motion under Article 1 of the warrant. This year, we honor Peg Whittemore. Peg, would you please come forward? But you're going to have to wait up here while I read all your accomplishments. Margaret Peg Whittemore moved to Sudbury in 1960, quickly became involved in town as she became membership chairwoman of the First Parish Unitarian Church. Then earning a water safety instruction certification, she ran the town's swimming program at Walden Pond for some years. In 1966, she became one of the 16 women nationally to win a full scholarship to Wellesley College to earn a Master of Science diploma in chemistry under the auspices of the National Science Foundation. We in Sudbury may recognize Peg as a scholar and athlete, as well as an environmental advocate. She is vice president of the group Sustainable Sudbury, formerly the Sudbury Earth Decade Committee. In other town endeavors, Peg is currently coordinator of the Council on Aging Senior Work Program, to which she has dedicated the past 10 years, a program which effectively and efficiently impacts all town offices. Peg has also driven for the council's fish service to take residents to doctor's appointments and more. Before that, Peg led inspection, maintenance, and tours of the trail of the town open land under the auspices of the Conservation Commission. Further, she has served on the Healthy Schools Committee, the Sewer Assessment Citizens Advisory Committee from 2003, its inception, till its dissolution in 2011, the Pay Per Throw Committee from 1998 until its dissolution in 2006, and has been an unenrolled election officer since 2004. With her environmental and social concerns, as well as her spirit of volunteerism, Peg continues to make the world, and her community in particular, a better place. Ms. Whittemore.
I am very honored to have been chosen to open this 2012 town meeting, even though I wonder a bit at times. Article 1, hear reports. Move to accept the reports of the town boards, commissions, officers, and committees as printed in the 2011 town report, or as otherwise presented, subject to the correction of errors, if any, where found.
Does that receive a second? It does. The Finance Committee, I believe, takes no position. Selectmen are in favor of this article. Any discussion? I see none. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes unanimously. Thank you, Peg. I'd now like to review some procedural matters for those who are new to town meeting, and just to remind those of you who have attended before some of the rules. I hope you've had a chance to review your warrant and familiarize yourself with the summary of basic town meeting procedures and motion primer. It's at the beginning of your warrant on pages Roman numerals 2, 3, 4, and 5. I'm reminded to ask you to please turn off all cell phones and any other device that emits any noise of any kind. Please give your name and address clearly each time you speak in order to assure a clear audio tape record. If you desire to be recognized, please raise your card. Do not stand at the microphone. I will be able to see you in your seat. If you're sitting there a standing mic and I recognize you, you may go there to speak. Otherwise, wait for a runner to bring you a handheld mic. The mic will be on. You do not have to blow into it. Just begin with your name and address. We are using Troop 63 Boy Scouts, led by Scoutmaster Fred Rust, again this year, as runners. Because of the long aisles without any breaks here in the auditorium, we need those runners to get the mics to you if you're sitting other than in the aisle in order for you to be able to speak. The Boy Scouts today, if I have the correct names, Emmett Elkasab, Tim Dunphy, and Liam Dunphy. Okay, thank you. All motions of substance, including main motions and motions to amend a main motion, shall be delivered to myself and the town clerk in writing before they are made. Also, you should give a copy to the folks at the viewgraph in the front of the hall. When you make a motion or an amendment, you must do so when first recognized and not at the end of a statement or question. And I'd like to add a few things about amendments. First, you should see the guidelines for electronic presentations on the town website at www.sudbury.ma.us. If you have an amendment, email it to Mark Thompson in advance of tonight or even right now. He's our technology administrator, and Mark, I misplaced it. It's at Thompson, what is it? Info Systems. @sudbury.ma.us. He will get it directly here and then also share it with me. The reason why that's a pretty good idea if you have an amendment to do that is, one, as a courtesy to the hall, if you don't do that and you bring it to me just after you've made your amendment, actually immediately before you've made the amendment, then it has to be shared with Mark. He then has to type it out while the hall waits. In addition, I have to make a judgment on every amendment that is made, whether or not it's in the four corners of the article. When I get it, I'm looking at it for the first time, not having seen it, and I'm gonna judge it on the words that are given to me. And it's not infrequent that it turns out that it's not within the four corners of the article, and I will deem the amendment not in order to be brought forward. However, if given to Mark in advance, particularly by a few days, or even a few hours, if it gets down to that, he then shares it with me, I have more of a chance to look at it, and I may even contact you to suggest some wording changes if I think the amendment as written is not within the four corners. I may suggest some wording changes that are acceptable to you, and then find it within the four corners of the article. And there's actually a third reason. If you share that amendment with the presenter of the main motion, it may well be that you convince him or her that this is a good idea, and they will incorporate that into their motion, which makes it unnecessary for you to make the amendment with the chance that the hall might reject it or that I might reject it. Very unusual, Mr. DePompei. What is it? Absolutely. For that, I will definitely do that. Info, systems, systems, @sudbury.ma.us. Thank you very much. Just to continue, only registered voters of the town and non-registered town and regional school employees and our elected state officials may speak without leave of the hall. Non-residents are required to sit in the last two rows to the left or the right of the hall in the back. I caution those of you who are here because of a special matter of concern to you not to bolt the hall as soon as you have voted on the matter. You will be showing your neighbors a courtesy by listening to their articles as they have listened to yours. Please be reminded that if you present or speak on articles, the bylaw is very explicit that presenters will speak for a maximum of 10 minutes and speakers for a maximum of 5 minutes. For presenters, we have a timer going, and for those presenters, when you have 10 minutes and you wish to speak for more than five, at 5 minutes it will buzz. You can disregard that. You're halfway used up. Having said that, it'd be a good idea for some folks to keep in mind that President Abraham Lincoln in 1863 had this little address to the nation called the Gettysburg Address, and he took exactly 2 minutes. And a lot of people remember that address, so keep that in mind. Also, our bylaw does not require you to speak for the full 10 minutes or 5 minutes. That's the maximum. Unless you move in the words of the article as printed in the warrant, every presenter of a motion must tell the hall of any word changes in the motion and how that differs from the words that the voters saw in the warrant. And the reason that's so important is because they're seeing this to the voters, are seeing this change for the very first time. You may have seen it for a while, the presenter, but the voter has not. So it's your job to tell the voters what the change is and why, if necessary, the why. Vote counting takes considerably longer in this auditorium because of the very long rows with no aisle breaks. So please do not ask for a head count by tellers unless you are sure that I have miscalculated. I assure you that unless the standing vote is obvious from up here, looking down on the hall, I will ask for a counted vote. If you wish to vote on an article and are at home watching these proceedings on cable TV, I strongly suggest you leave well before the discussion begins so you have adequate time to park, check in at the tables inside the side doors, and find your way to the auditorium before the doors are locked during the vote count. It would be unfortunate if voters cut it too close and got shut out of the vote. When you look at your warrant for each article, you'll see towards the beginning of it the percentage vote required for passage of an article. It's set forth in the warrant right next to that article. A brief comment is in order for reconsideration, given that it was requested twice by the losing parties at a recent town meeting. Both lost overwhelmingly on the reconsideration vote, and that's because there is a long tradition in Sudbury of only granting reconsideration in very limited circumstances, namely when there was such misstatements of fact that enough voters would have voted differently on the original article so as to change the result of that vote. In the 40 years that I've been attending town meeting, reconsideration has succeeded less than a handful of times. In fact, one of the reasons is because there are many attendees who voted in favor of an article that failed, but still vote against reconsideration of that article. Please keep in mind that there shall be no clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noises for or against speakers before, during, or after presentations. Speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, speaker, or town official. Let me repeat. Speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, speaker, or town official. If you do, your right to speak may be terminated. Recently, there have been some disgraceful comments made by some politician, frustrated Americans of different persuasion, as well as many, many, many talk show hosts. This is a reminder that any such behavior will not be tolerated and will be dealt firmly by me. Allow me to read Massachusetts General Laws, Chapter 39, Section 17. I quote, "No person shall address a town meeting without leave of the moderator. All persons shall, at the request of the moderator, be silent. If a person, after warning from the moderator, persists in disorderly behavior, the moderator may order him to withdraw from the meeting. If he does not withdraw, the moderator may order a constable or other person to remove him and confine him in some convenient place until the meeting is adjourned." End quote. Please, I hope never to use such powers. I recognize the chair of the Board of Selectmen, Larry O'Brien, for a state of the town address, which is not subject to the 10-minute limitation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 373rd gathering of Sudbury's annual town meeting. Over the course of the past 3 years, the primary message of this address has been about achieving local sustainability as a community. Sustainability from an economic point of view, so that we make sure we can sustain a high level of services to the residents without the need for annual overrides, as well as sustainability of our natural resources so that we leave the environment in a better condition for our grandchildren. So what have we done? What are we looking to do to advance this mission? Looking back, first, much has been done, starting with the very successful negotiations 3 years ago with all town bargaining groups that resulted in health insurance savings in the magnitude of $1.5 million, as Selectman Drabinski reported last year. The Sudbury Public Schools' last collective bargaining agreement resulted in more than $4.1 million of additional savings over the same three-year period. The decision to be certified as a green community and our Green Energy Committee have generated over $300,000 in energy efficiency grants, with another grant being applied for that will help fund a portion of Article 18 that will be discussed later in this meeting. These will provide savings to the town for years to come. In addition, the combination of the SPS School Committee, the Permanent Building Committee, and the Green Energy Committee were successful at last year's special town meeting in obtaining 30% matching money from the School Building Authority to repair and replace windows, the roof, and the 40-year-old boiler at the Noy School. This resulted in more than $700,000 in state funds being brought into Sudbury. Further significant energy savings are anticipated from these improvements. The town manager and the SPS superintendent have embarked on the task of hiring a person to fill the position of shared facilities manager. This is a position that has the potential to identify multiple areas of savings and improved efficiencies for both the town and Sudbury Public Schools. Other areas that have been the focus of staff, board, and committee time include the Permanent Building Committee initiated report on all town and school building roofs relative to their current condition and needed repairs and maintenance regimens. The Town Center Committee has finalized plans for improvements that will enhance both vehicle and pedestrian safety, including modernization of the traffic controls to improve traffic movement, along with some historic restoration of the town green that is part of the plan as well. Our public safety officials are moving forward with combined public safety dispatch. This has been recommended by consultants long ago and is the gold standard of what most towns have moved to. With this proposal, Sudbury will be moving to a best practice with nearly all shifts covered by professional, career, civilian dispatchers who are able to provide emergency medical instructions while emergency personnel are en route to you. Two other major initiatives that required large amounts of staff time were the result of legislative initiatives. The first, originating from this body at last year's special town meeting in the form of Article 2, a citizen's petition article that provides property tax relief to Sudbury seniors. Article 2 was overwhelmingly supported at the special town meeting and was advanced to the state legislature, where it has slowly moved through the Revenue Committee, where the bill has been designated to become a pilot program in Sudbury for a period of 3 years for possible statewide enactment in the future. This bill is currently being reviewed by the House Ways and Means Committee. With the elevation to pilot program, additional work was required so that the bill has the best possible chance of being approved by the Ways and Means Committee, and sent to the governor to become law. Over the last 3 weeks, the assessor's office, our town finance director, the two proponents, Mr. Tyler and Mr. Levington, and a three-person committee comprised of Mr. Joe Nugent, Ms. Susan Iuliano, and Mr. Jack Ryan reviewed and proofed the bill to fully test its functionability. Based on the report that this group presented just last week to the Board of Selectmen, we are confident that this is a very workable piece of legislation, and when signed into law, the benefit will benefit Sudbury seniors and the community as a whole for many years to come. We thank everyone that has worked so diligently on this game-changing program. The second significant legislative change came from the State House down to all municipalities in the Commonwealth. After 5 years of lobbying, legislation was passed that completely overhauled the process that communities had to undertake to join the state employee insurance pool that is more commonly known as the GIC. While this was one of the major suggestions of the Budget Review Task Force years ago, at that time the collective bargaining laws required that 70% approval be gained from all town and SPS bargaining units. Now, while some people did not agree with the Board of Selectmen 3 years ago, our decision to modify our self-insured health insurance plan at the time and to negotiate changes in contribution levels have benefited the town's sustainability efforts to a far greater extent, while leaving the town in a position to capture additional savings in fiscal year 13, as you will hear in just a moment. This year's town meeting has many articles that support our never-ending effort to find savings, improve efficiencies, and enhance upon the quality and delivery of school and town services that citizens require and expect of us. As always, we will begin the budget adjustments. We will begin with budget adjustments, which is known as Article 2. Usually, we're making adjustments to cover the cost of snow and ice removal, but with this year's mild winter and limited need for snow removal, we have finished the year with a positive balance in our snow and ice account. In Article 2, we will ask for you to approve a list of items that will be charged to the current fiscal year, as we are taking this opportunity to catch up on work and equipment needs that have been previously pushed aside over the last few years. With the previously mentioned change in the collective bargaining laws, the Board of Selectmen made the decision to join the state employee health insurance plan known as the GIC, and today was the final day of open enrollment, and the numbers, people were still turning in their paperwork late this afternoon, but the numbers that we have represent $2 million in gross savings from this change and a $1.1 million in net savings that were generated by this decision. And these savings will play a large role in helping to balance this year's budget, which is Article 4, while also providing funding for the labor negotiations that are or will be getting underway. Since January's budget hearings, the Board of Selectmen and the Finance Committee have been discussing how best to address the list of assorted projects and infrastructure investments, along with future obligations like OPEB and the EPA-DEP stormwater management regulations that need to be addressed and funded. Following the close of this town meeting, the Board of Selectmen will begin discussing the formation of a strategic investment task force, potentially comprised of members from the Board of Selectmen, the Finance Committee, Sudbury Public Schools, Lincoln Sudbury, and the Planning Board. This task force will be charged with reviewing projects and infrastructure investments and recommend the appropriate funding mechanisms that will be presented to, for your consideration and approval at either our annual town meeting or special fall town meetings as needed. Utilizing this approach to begin reviewing and prioritizing on an annual basis, it has been decided that Articles 14, 17, and 19 will be indefinitely postponed this evening because they are ideal for review by this task force, with the distinct possibility that a 2012 fall town meeting would be called, with some or all of these articles being brought back for your consideration for funding. Article 22 asks for your approval to amend our senior residential community bylaw so that moderate-sized parcels of buildable land can be considered for age-restricted senior housing versus single-family home construction. And Article 30 has been a priority of the town for a very long time. With your approval, the town will protect and preserve in perpetuity one of the quintessential parcels of open space remaining in Sudbury, and in doing so, permanently protect it from any type of development. While much has been accomplished, we have areas that should raise concern. Our schools especially, including especially Lincoln Sudbury, are being challenged to continue to deliver the expected levels of excellence that they are known for, but have ever-increasing difficulty delivering those levels of excellence with the level of resources that they've had to work with, and with the ever-increasing obligations that must be met before they are able to fund the everyday school operations. We will hear more about this in more specific detail as part of the budget presentations under Article 4. The Board of Selectmen and Finance Committee are aware of the increasing focus on OPEB obligations that statewide for cities and towns represent a $25 to $30 billion liability. The recently formed State OPEB Commission is just beginning to examine this issue and is charged with the responsibility of reporting to the legislature recommendations on what the structure of retiree benefits should be and how we should all pay for them. These challenges and others will be dealt with in a deliberate and methodical open public meeting process, the same way that Sudbury has approached its challenges over the last 373 years. I am hopeful that any negative discourse on these issues can turn into productive public dialogue so that our collective efforts can be targeted towards preserving and enhancing the qualities that make Sudbury the community that it is. Thank you for taking the time to attend town meeting this evening. We look forward to seeing you tomorrow and possibly on Wednesday as we all participate in this open form of government.
Thank you. I understand the Finance Committee will wait until the article on the budget, Article 4, to make its statement on the town's financial condition. I'd like now to turn your attention to the consent calendar on pages Roman numeral 3 and Roman numeral 4 of the warrant. As is our tradition, I will call out the numbers of the articles one by one. There are only three of them. If any voter has doubt about passing any motions or wishes any explanation of any subject on the consent calendar, the voter should stand and say the word hold in a loud, clear voice when the number is called. I will then inquire as to whether the request is a hold for a question or for debate. If the purpose of the request was merely to ask a question, an attempt to obtain a satisfactory answer will be made, and if that occurs, the article will remain on the consent calendar, absent a further request to hold. If the purpose of the request was to hold the article for debate, the article will be removed from the consent calendar, restored to its original place in the warrant, to be brought up and debated and voted in the usual course. No voter should hesitate to exercise the right to remove matters from the consent calendar. It is the view of the voters as to the need for debate that is supreme, not that of the town officials who put together the consent calendar. Having said that, it is hoped that voters will remove articles from the consent calendar only in cases of genuine concern. In past years, it has occasionally happened that articles were removed from the consent calendar and, when reached in the normal course, passed unanimously without debate, thus indicating that the initial removal request was, perhaps, not fully considered before being exercised. So, let us move on to the three consent calendar items. The first one is Article 10, Chapter 90, Highway Funding. I see no hands. The second one is Article 11, Real Estate Exemptions. Could you stand up and in the mic, give your name, address, and tell us what the hold is for debate or a question?
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I hold it for a question. It seems as a weird procedural issue here. This is an article that has financial implications. Under our bylaws, I believe that requires a FinCom recommendation for or against. There's no FinCom recommendation in the warrant, so if we pass this on the consent calendar, then we've violated our bylaws by passing an article that without the required FinCom recommendation. So unless you can get it now on the spot.
We're gonna ask. Thank you. Mr. Chair of the Finance Committee, Jim Rao, has the Finance Committee taken a position on Article 11?
Okay.
We're going to have the discussion out loud by the Finance Committee, or I can poll them individually.
Whichever you prefer, Mr. Moderator.
Very good. Mr. Rao, how would you recommend us vote on Article 11, for or against?
Four.
Mr. Jacobson?
In favor.
In favor. I can't see who's next.
Joan
Carlton.
In favor.
Chuck Woodard.
In favor.
Jamie.
In favor.
Gossels. In favor. Bill Nealon.
In favor.
In favor. Mark Manassian.
In favor.
And Doug Cohen.
In favor.
How's that? You all set with it?
Yes.
Thank you. Anybody else want Article 11 held for debate or for a question? If I don't see your hands, just shout it out. Thank you. Article 12 is town school revolving funds. Sir, can you stand up and get the mic over to that gentleman?
Question?
I'm sorry?
I have a question.
And can you just give us your name and
address? Brian Semple, 15 Revere.
What's the question, sir?
So on the revolving funds, we're approving $150,000 for the Regional Housing Services Office. Last year at town meeting, when we adopted this office, the question I asked was, this is to provide services for neighboring towns for affordable housing. I thought it was odd that we as a town were struggling financially. We're going to go provide services for additional other towns. So the main question I asked was, will this Regional Housing Services Office pay for itself, including all benefits, salary, and most importantly, OPEB? The information I got from the town prior to the meeting, despite the assurances of the selectmen at last year's town meeting, was that it would. Prior to town meeting, I got data from the town that said, in fact, OPEB is not covered in the Regional Housing Services Office. So we're losing money to these other towns providing them services. So my question is, will the selectmen once again commit that next year at town meeting, OPEB will be included in all the income statements for the Regional Housing Services Office? We won't lose money on that.
Thank you. Mr. O'Brien, or
town manager,
Maureen Valente.
Thank you. Good evening. If I can update that information, because we do have more since then. A back-of-the-envelope calculation, and OPEB calculations take a lot of assumptions, what someone was down to get to a program or an individual level. You have to know when someone was hired, when they're retiring, how many years they've worked, and a whole lot of other assumptions from that. But the back-of-the-envelope calculation that we have done for the employee who's in question here, we think of about $2,500 a year would be the set-aside. And so the half of her time that is charged to this revolving fund, it would be about $1,250. And we can accommodate that within the administrative fee that we've set, and we will hold that for FY12 and going forward. That is part of the assignment that we've asked the actuaries to do when they do the next assignment of the OPEB, is give us more tools to be more precise. So at this point, we're holding an amount we think is reasonable.
Thank you.
Does everybody understand what OPEB is? No. Ms. Valente, would you explain to the hall?
Sure. I'd be happy to. OPEB stands for Other Post-Employment Retirement Benefits. Doesn't include pension. That's already calculated separately. So what you're primarily talking about here is the town of Sudbury and all towns in the regional school districts in the state do offer coverage towards the retirement health insurance costs of their employees. And for the town of Sudbury, we pay 50% of those. Sudbury and almost every other town in the city in the nation has been doing a pay-as-you-go system where they've been paying those. We'll currently pay out of current dollars for our retirees. What's become a best practice, not a requirement at this point, but a best practice, is to start setting money aside for that. It's considered an unfunded liability, and to start putting money aside for those obligations. So that's what Mr. Semple is responding to, and that's the calculation that I spoke of.
Thank you. Anybody else have a question on Article 12? Could you stand and when the mic comes, give your name for the record, please, address.
Dandy Pompey, 35 Haynes Road. Last year when we got to this point, we got into a discussion about revolving funds, and what we determined was under Mass General Law, there was a requirement that the department heads report at town meeting for the prior fiscal year the amount that was collected, the amount that was expended, and the amount that was remaining in the fund, and then also estimate it for the current fiscal year and estimate it for the coming fiscal year. Have we provided that data?
Ms. Valente?
The finance director, Ms. Turkelson, to respond.
Andrea Turkelson, the finance director.
Thank you. In response to the inquiry last year, we have been posting the
revolving funds that come before you each year. We've been posting a report quarterly on the town's website. In addition, we have provided the report that Mr. DePompe spoke of in the annual report that was issued along when the town warrant came out. We also have an exhibit that we can show the hall tonight that has that information as well, if that's something that you would care to see.
Thank you. Anybody else have a question on Article 12? I see none. Mr. O'Brien, would you kindly move to take Articles 10, 11, and 12 out of order and consider them together at this time?
So moved, Mr. Moderator.
Is there a second? There is. Finance Committee have an opinion on this? Selectmen want to say anything further? This requires a 4/5 vote that need not be counted unless it is close. So I ask, all those in favor, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it is unanimous. It passes. Mr. O'Brien, would you care to move in the words of the consent calendar motions as printed on page Roman numeral 4 in the warrant for the following articles, 10, 11, and 12?
So moved, Mr. Moderator.
Is there a second? There is. Finance Committee or Selectmen care to add anything? No. This requires a unanimous vote to pass. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, I see none. It is passes unanimously. We are now on to Article 2, the budget adjustments. Maureen Valente, Town Manager, for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to amend the votes taken under Article 4, Fiscal Year 12 Operating Budget of the 2011 Annual Town Meeting by adding to or deleting from line items thereunder, by transfer between or among accounts, or by transfer from available funds as follows. Transfer from 400 Snow and Ice, a total of $163,050 to be allocated to 100 General Government, $31,050. 200 Public Safety, $44,000. 400 Public Works, $70,000. 500 Human Services, $18,000. Transfer from 900 Unclassified Benefits, a total of $194,941 to be allocated to 300 Education, Sudbury Public Schools, $178,500. 300 Education, Minuteman Regional Vocational Technical High School, $16,441.
Does that receive a second? It does. Ms. Valente for presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. On your handout, on one side of it, there's a two-sided. The top of page one is the summary of these dollars that I'm going to be talking about.
Excuse me for interrupting, Ms. Valente. Does anybody not have the so-called Finance Committee handout dated 5/7/2012. Could you keep your hands raised? Patty, do we have any more left? They're all dispersed. For those of you who are sitting in pairs, and one of you and both of you have it, could you pass one to the Boy Scout so he can pass it out to those who have none? Thank you. I appreciate that. If you do not have any handout, please raise your hand again. There's two people over there. And they're sitting next to each other, so they can share one. And there's two people back there. Do we have any more? Here you go. Can I grab one of yours? Anybody else need one? Raise your hand, please. There's two coming right there. Anybody else? We're all set. Sorry, Maureen. Go right ahead.
No problem, Mr. Moderator. Thank you. So as I said, the summary is on that sheet, and I'm showing the slide here, which shows the total of what these adjustments would be. For the last, I think you know, many years, I've been coming and asking you to strip other departments to put money into the snow and ice for the deficit. We've all remarked on what an incredibly mild winter it was, so this is sort of the opposite direction that we're proposing to do here. Under this operating, this article, this is giving flexibility to the municipal government to take care of some items. So out of the total in this motion, $163,050 is for the municipal government. And what we are looking here to do is take care of items of particular backlog or concern about aging equipment that we've been experiencing. Since these are one-time funds, they won't carry into FY14. They will close out to free cash if we don't use them. We've matched them up with these one-time expenditures and needs. These funds are the same ones I've talked about for the last few years where I have looked to take the funds out of the departments to try to balance with the snow and ice. Just a little history of the snow and ice spending here. You can see we've been budgeting about $414,000 a year. We upped that to $424,000 this year. If I have time or someone wants to know, I can tell you about why you budget the way you do on snow and ice. But regardless, this is the amount, and you can see for the last several years we've been overspending tremendously and taking money out of the reserve fund and other departments to be able to accomplish that. At this point, we have $163,000 that is unspent. There were circumstances where there were storms this year, and the DPW director does stock up on snow and ice at the beginning of the year, not knowing what kind of year it's going to be. So that's why the balance of it was spent. The things that I'm looking for and asking town meeting if they would vote to support for the town, first to replace 15 PCs that we have that are 8 years or older. We actually have 30 that have now reached that age and are problematic. We'd like to be able to replace 15 of them. We'd also like within this to be able to get 2 tablets. I think they've become the productivity tool that a lot of people are using, and we see a lot of advantage to that and would love to be able to try moving in that direction too. We'd like to get 2 school zone signs with driver feedback. And if you say, what the heck is that? Here's a picture of one. The ones at the Nixon School, as well as on Old Sudbury Road at Noyes, are getting very old. They need to be hand-changed for daylight savings times. They need frequent maintenance, particularly the one at Nixon. And we think that getting this more modern tool would be very useful and improve safety in those areas. We've long wanted to be able to do that, and this is an opportunity. The other one is the speed control driver feedback sign, the next one on the list. And many of you have probably seen those in your neighborhoods. The police have them, and they move them from neighborhood to neighborhood. And it also has that radar function that says how fast you're going. And we get a lot of requests. Neighborhoods would like to see those and find those as a very effective tool to remind drivers to slow down in their neighborhoods. 2 areas where I've been cutting from budgets, as I said, the road work particularly and the vehicle maintenance lines as our vehicles are getting older in particular. And then $40,000 for dying and dead tree removal. We are responsible for the trees that are in the public ways, and we used to spend about $62,000 a year on that. We've cut that back tremendously. There's quite a backlog of trees that we need to be able to get to. $30,000 for a fuel-efficient vehicle. And let me just talk for a moment about our vehicles. If you can read this list here, we have, number of vehicles here that we use. They're mainly for people who are inspectional services. They do go from place to place, or they take materials and supplies from place to place. And we really don't buy new vehicles for these people. We wait in the police and fire when they use theirs for 4 or 5 years, they pass them down then to the other departments, and that's what we use and assign to those employees. As we've cut back the money for police and fire to be able to have these, they're older when they get to the employees, the other departments, and they're in really bad shape. And so as I show at the very top, there's 5 that are now rated in very bad condition, and 2 of them actually we've had to junk. They couldn't pass inspection. We couldn't replace them anymore. The middle group are the groups where they're in okay condition. They're the ones that are sort of 4 or 5 years old. And then what we're looking to for FY12, we will have 2 vehicles that will pass down. One, if the capital budget is passed, there's a fire vehicle that's being replaced, will pass down. And the police have one, a Taurus, to pass down. But against 5 that are really bad and 2 already gone, we can't use, we'd like one more, and actually to go out and purchase one. What we'd like, because we're a green community, is to purchase a fuel-efficient vehicle, likely a Ford Fusion, and be able to add that. We think that'll help add to the life and protect future capital budgets. I've put DPW/inspection/help. We would look, what typically we do is those, that's the 5 minutes? Yeah. Thank you. Those in the middle group are the most user-intensive of the vehicles, so they would probably get the newer vehicles, and then they would pass on to the people at the top these older vehicles. They're the ones that tend to get the older ones. So that's how we sort of manage the vehicles. And back to the list, a hazardous waste day, 18,000. We have not had one of those in about 3 years, and we think we're overdue. We think residents are, we thank you for keeping and not illegally disposing of your hazardous waste and materials, but we'd like to be able to collect that and have that under the Board of Health. And then the last one I'd like is the Malone Gravel Pit. We are ready to start looking at use of that. We'd like to do a highest and best use analysis. The Board of Selectmen had committed to that. There are different groups and people in town interested in seeing what the future of that should be. That's a step that we need to take a look at that. There are other budget adjustments, and they for two educational purposes, and I thought I'd just briefly give you a highlight of those. The Minuteman Regional Vocational High School has a capital project, and I believe we'll probably be talking about that, but that's $16,441, and Sudbury Public Schools is $178,500. The source of those funds, and in connection with moving to the GIC as part of the package that was offered to the employees, we agreed to a rate holiday, a premium rate holiday, which means we did not take money out of their paychecks for one pay period. And the money that moves with the town on the employer's part also did not need to be used and became available for other uses. The 178 is the portion that would be attributable to SPS for their employees. We actually have a total for the town side of 89,000. I'm only proposing to use 16,441 of that into this article for Minuteman, and the balance, 72,559. When we get to Article 18, and we've got a natatorium, a word I learned about this year, project, we'd like to propose using those funds under that. So I'm just giving you a little preview of that in terms of how these funds would be used. Dr. Wilson.
You want to tell the rest of us what a natatorium is?
I want to leave that for Jim Kelly. It's actually an air exchange system, an HVAC type of system that is associated with the Atkinson Pool and the Fairbank Community Center. And if that's all right, I'll let him talk about that. But it is in your warrant. It is a capital project. Last, I'm going to wrap up with just giving you a preview here of what SPS, the itemized items that they presented to the FinCom and would propose to do under this article if these savings are moved over to their budget. That's all I have, and I would request your favorable vote on this article. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to call for questions in a moment. If there are only a few questions, we'll do it as just one vote on all of them. If it turns out there's several questions on different areas, we may go line by line, just like we do in the budget. But let's first find out if there are any questions or comments on Article 2. Yes, sir. Could you stand for the mic?
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. The thing that I'm puzzled by is the inclusion of the Minuteman in this. Our contribution to Minuteman is an assessment that's based on what on how many students we send there and on what the overall budget of the district is. So what is it that makes us suddenly send them some money? Is this an offset against an assessment that we already have, or are we just think it's a good idea to throw money at them? I don't understand why they're included.
Ms. Valente, do you have an answer?
Thank you. It's Mr. Liotto from Minuteman here.
Is there anyone from Minuteman? Could you come forward, sir?
And Mark, there's actually a presentation explaining this project, if that's right.
What's that?
He has a couple of slides explaining.
Sir, did you hear the question about the $16,441? Could you introduce yourself and then give us an explanation, please? This gentleman is an employee at Minuteman Regional Vocational Technical High School.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. My name is Chris Luoto. I am the Assistant Business Manager at Minuteman. To answer your question, this is an additional assessment. On June 27th, the Town of Lexington issued a violation of the Mass Building Code and Fire Safety Regulations of the district. They ordered to halt the use of our trades hall. It's an educational area of our building until all issues were remediated. Occupancy permit was issued in order to provide the school to open on August 25th, 2011. Combustible walls that were in place for more than 20 years were removed and the area reconstructed to meet building and fire codes. We do have several pictures here. This is the trades hall. These are the combustible walls that were there for 20 years. This is the demolition during that. And then the final slide is the construction afterwards. We did work with the superintendent and the administration did work with all the town managers to make them aware of the situation. We needed to amend our current year operating budget to pay for these unanticipated emergency costs. All 16 member towns will share the cost, which was capped at $485,000. Sudbury's share of the repairs is 3.46%, which is $16,441.
Okay. Are there any other questions on Article 2? I see no other hands. So we'll take this all as one vote. All those in favor of Article 2, the motion is on the view graph, raise your cards. All those opposed, it actually passes unanimously. So we're going to move on to Article 3, which is who has the motion on the Article 3? Mr. O'Brien.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The motion is to indefinitely postpone as we are, indefinitely postpone.
Did I hear you say I move to indefinitely postpone Article 3?
You did hear me say that the motion that I
does,
move to.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. O'Brien for presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The presentation is that this year we are not adding any funds to the stabilization fund, and therefore we are recommending indefinite postponement.
Finance Committee, Mr. Jacobson.
Finance Committee takes no position.
On the indefinite postponement. Any discussion on the IP? Yes, sir.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. Are we taking anything out of the stabilization fund, or are we just leaving it intact for this year?
No, if we were putting money in or taking it out, it requires a two-thirds vote at town meeting, and there isn't any. So the answer has to be no. Anybody else wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? I see no one. We did get a second, so all those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? I see none. It passes unanimously. We now move on to Article 4. Is that the one on the consent calendar? No. No, I guess not. So everybody has a budget handout because that's what we're about to talk about. So let me, again, this is referred to at the beginning of the warrant under those Roman numeral pages. There's a whole section on the budget. But let me reiterate it to those of you who have not been to town meeting before. The tradition in our town is to first take a motion from the Finance Committee proposing a budget that would limit the amount which would be required to finance the Finance Committee's budget proposal, which in this year, fiscal year 2013, it is a no override budget. The limiting motion will seek a vote of the hall as to the overall limit on the budget. A vote in favor will not mean the town meeting has voted for a particular distribution of the total amount as set forth in the handout, but it will establish the upper limit of our budget for fiscal year 2013. Once we dispose of that limit, this is all part of Article 4. Once we dispose of the limiting motion, the Finance Committee will make a main motion on the budget. At that time, I will read line items 100 to 1,000 in the handout and ask if anyone has a motion to amend or a question. You can then make a motion to amend to reduce a line item or to increase one item and decrease another by a similar amount. You cannot make a motion merely to increase a line item alone because then the budget will exceed the not to exceed amount that we preceded it with the limiting motion vote. So, again, if any of that is not totally comprehensible, take a look at Roman numeral pages 2 and 3 in the warrant. I now is that fairly clear? We've been doing it this way for a long, long time, but if anyone doesn't understand, please raise your hand and we'll be glad to explain it further. Okay, I now recognize the chair of the Finance Committee, Jim Rao, for a budget limiting motion in the first part of Article 4.
Actually, Mr. Moderator, if I could ask a question.
Yes.
The amount on the view graph is 79,099,861.
No, that I assume, is that your number?
First you have to make the motion.
No. Mr. Rao, is that the Finance Committee number or just the number? I don't care what's on the screen.
The number on the view graph.
What's that?
The number on the view graph.
Is that the number you wish to use?
No, it is not.
Very good. Could you change that?
The number should read, from the Finance Committee's perspective, 81,509,219.
Is that the number in the handout?
Correct.
Great. So look on your handout. Don't look on the screen yet. Mr. Rao, could you make that motion, please?
Move that the amount appropriated under the FY13 budget, no override budget, not exceed the sum of $81,509,219.
Okay. Does that receive a second? It does. Okay. Now, Mr. Rao is going to give two presentations now. He's going to give the presentation on the budget. But it's at the same time as they announced at the beginning of town meeting, he will give the FinCom statement of the town's financial condition, which it must do each year. And this also is obviously not subject to the 10-minute rule. And after we do that, we'll hear from the three major cost centers, the two schools and the town. So let us start with Mr. Rao. And there'll be plenty of time for any of you to participate. If you have an amendment, if you have any discussion, we'll have time for that.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Hello, everyone. My name is Jim Rao. I'm the chair of the Sudbury Finance Committee. Before I get started, I'd like to do just take a few moments for a town meeting of the role of the Finance Committee, much like I did last year. We are responsible for reviewing budgets for the town and the schools and making recommendations to the Board of Selectmen and to the taxpayers at town meeting. In this role, we have no authority to make spending decisions, as that is the responsibility of our various elected bodies. Rather, our role is to examine those budgets on your behalf and make independent and informed recommendations regarding the budget and other financial issues. We are residents, taxpayers, and volunteers. Our backgrounds are varied, as we have 5 committee members with children currently in the school system, both the K-8 as well as the high school, and other committee members whose children have already gone through our school system. We have retirees, seniors, and business professionals. We also have a blend of experienced and new, as 2 of our members have been on the committee for less than 1 year. So with that background, on to the budget. Is there a click or something? All right. So from an agenda perspective, I'd like to cover 2 topics. First, recap some of what the key assumptions and issues were for FY13 and that were outlined in the budget and the warrant. Then I'd like to take you through some of the recent changes, the handout you have, that impact the budgets and how those are different from what was in the warrant. So as for the first item, and for a little bit of a play on words, we're going to talk about the good, the bad, and the uncertain as it relates to the budget process. So just a quick recap, and this is in the warrant, so I won't spend too much time, but just to start with what the guidance that we gave to each of the cost centers heading into this process. So we asked each cost center, as we've done in prior years, to submit 2 budgets to us, a no override budget as well as a level services budget. As a majority of the labor contracts for our 3 principal cost centers are set to expire at the end of this fiscal year, the Finance Committee believed it was important that a level of consistency exist in which all the FY13 budget submissions were prepared and submitted. As a result, we agreed on the assumptions listed behind me, the most important of which are that normal salary steps and lanes, but no COLAs, should be considered in terms of an increase relative to FY13 planning purposes. Our no override budget request was constrained by the initial revenue projections that we reviewed, and those projections allowed for 2.5% annual budget growth. So on to the good, so to speak, if you will. One of the drivers favorably impacting year-over-year budget growth, which you heard from Mr. O'Brien, are the respective changes made by both the town and the schools related to health care. These were enabled by changes that the state legislature provided to municipalities. In terms of LS, they chose to negotiate with their employees to make significant changes to their health care plans, changes that will drive year-over-year savings at the high school with a reduction of approximately 11% versus current FY12 levels. On the SPS and town side, the decision was made to move to the GIC and will generate significant savings as compared to FY12. You can see the estimated savings at roughly $1.1 million. And again, those were shown in the warrant on the benefits reserve line items for both the town and SPS from a budget perspective. We believe a move to the GIC will have meaningful and positive long-term impact for all constituents. That said, we would remind town meeting that in the short term, the move to the GIC may, in several cases, negatively impact certain school and town employees, increasing the cost they need to bear for many items, such as higher copays. So now moving from the good to the bad, one of the drivers negatively impacting year-over-year budget growth are higher special education costs, specifically a significant rise in out-of-district costs. As you can see, this phenomenon is adversely impacting both our school systems, but in particular the high school. In fact, the increased experience by LS in this current fiscal year, FY12, qualified the district for what is known as extraordinary relief funds from the state. Through the budget process, one thing I think all parties agree on is that special education itself is not the problem. Rather, what is clearly broken is the funding mechanisms used to provide for these programs. This mandate, handed down from federal and state government, represents yet another unfunded mandate that local districts are required to cover. As a result, the Finance Committee remains concerned that the significant rise in these costs continues to put downward pressure on the remaining operating budgets of our two school systems. Moreover, one question that continually came up from our committee, as well as from residents during the budget process, was the following. As children progress through the joint K-12 system, why is it so difficult to accurately forecast special education costs? So over multiple years, it presents certain unique challenges. Obviously, as students get older, new challenges emerge. Also, students are constantly moving into and out of the district each year. Moreover, the level of state reimbursement also varies from year to year. Wanting to get into more of the details and into the actual numbers, I personally spent some time with Joanne Delaney at LS, who I thank very much for spending time with me, to better understand what some of these challenges are. The Finance Committee's goal was to get a more quantitative feel for how forecasts changed as a means to illustrate what these challenges were. What we looked at was the actual historical data for collective out-of-district students in FY09, students that would be moving up to the high school in FY11, 2 years later. As you can see, there were 24 students in out-of-district placements in FY09, and it seems reasonable that this could be used to form the basis for a forecast for fiscal year 2011 out-of-district costs. As you can see, actual experience was quite different. Of the 24 students, 17 remained in their current placement. Seven, however, had moved to new placements. In addition, 15 students moved to out-of-district placements while at LS. Applying an average cost per student for modeling purposes, these additional 15 placements would result in an incremental $1.3 million of unforecasted costs. In reality, the actual cost increase was actually higher, because not only were there 50 new placements, but the seven students that moved into different out-of-district placements actually moved into higher-cost placements. Please understand, I'm using this data to illustrate the challenge. And while this is not exactly an exact science, hopefully we can all gain an appreciation for why this presents such a budgetary challenge. Clearly, it's much more complicated than just following the students as they progress. And last, finally, on the uncertain side, is the biggest portion of our spend, which is people costs. As you all know, we're in the midst of collective bargaining process with the majority of our union employees. As nearly 80% of our town operating budget is people-related in the form of spending for compensation and benefits, a significant portion of our budget is and will remain in flux. While it is not possible to publicly comment on the status of negotiations, given the constraints of collective bargaining, all boards, committee, and town officials understand the need to settle these contracts as economically feasible as possible. So with that recap, let's now work and move forward in terms of what's changed since the publication of the warrant. So first, I'd like to review changes in our budget assumptions as compared to what was published in the warrant and that are contained in the handout you received this evening. At the time the warrant was finalized, our consensus expectation was for a 3% reduction in state aid heading into fiscal 2013. Fortunately, that expectation improved in April when the House published their budget. Instead of a decrease, we're actually expecting a slight increase in our state aid over FY12 levels. Given that the House tends to present the more conservative budget proposal, and based on input from our legislators, we have incorporated these increases into the no override budget forecast. The table on the slide shows the change of projected receipts as compared to the warrant. The next update is specific to the high school. First, LS received positive confirmation from the state regarding the level of extraordinary relief that the high school would receive, which will be approximately $421,000 in FY12. While this amount of relief is below the high end of assistance mentioned in the warrant, which was approximately $621,000, it remains sizable and effectively covers the LS funding gap for this current fiscal year, something which is certainly welcome news. This is important for FY13 because what it effectively does is free up funds from excess and deficiency, which is similar to free cash for the town, that can be used to help cover some of the funding gap in FY13. This amount is approximately $400,000. All the while, LS still keeps their E&D fund at a comparable level as to when they began in FY12. The last update is with regard to the recent SJC ruling on regional school district funding. What the SJC stated is that the default methodology for determining town assessments for regional schools is what's called a statutory method, a methodology that takes into consideration both the relative student populations as well as the state's calculation for minimum local contribution as determined using land and income value per community. As a matter of reference, Minuteman Regional Vocational uses a statutory method to determine member town assessments. Constituents from both Lincoln and Sudbury met just last week and agreed to work collaboratively to implement this methodology for FY13. Understand this has no impact on the overall budget for LS or spending levels. Rather, using the statutory method shifts the responsibility for funding LS as compared to the current per student basis in our regional agreement. The budget we are presenting to you this evening uses this new statutory method to determine the assessment. So if we take a slightly different view of the budget, we can see how all these changes translate into the operating budgets for each cost center. As highlighted on this slide, the allowable non-override budget growth for each cost center has increased from what was assumed in the warrant. These new revenue estimates for state aid result in growth of 3.35% for SPS in the town. Similarly, the LS budget is also allowed to grow by approximately 3.35% in the no-override budget scenario. However, because E&D funds and the change in the assessment methodology are included, the net increase from a Sudbury perspective is 2.77% in terms of the total assessment. The Finance Committee is required by law to recommend a non-override budget. For FY13, we are recommending a non-override budget of approximately $83 million. Which includes the $81.5 million for the main budget on the previous slide, as well as funding for capital and other items. As the changes I mentioned earlier have to do with improved estimates from the state, the non-override tax impact discussed in the warrant remains essentially unchanged, namely that the non-override budget represents a tax increase of approximately 3% or $327 on the average assessed home value of $621,400. Including new growth in commercial property taxes, the non-override budget results in a total tax increase of approximately $2.1 million. Lastly, and knowing that each of the cost centers will discuss what the impact of these and other changes means for their budget, I just want to leave you with a summary of what some of these changes mean as compared to what you've previously seen in the warrant. In your warrant, there was discussion of potential staff reductions at the high school of as many as 7.9 FTEs. Fortunately, layoffs will now be avoided. Similarly, the no override budget satisfies the level service requirements for SPS in the town as well. This positive outcome is a result of several factors beyond just the improved revenue outlook. First, in the case of LS, they are benefiting from the extraordinary relief just recently communicated from the state,
which allows the district to use E&D funds to help cover part of the FY13 operating deficit. Second, all three cost centers are benefiting from the healthcare savings that would be realized moving into FY13, a benefit that will keep more teachers in the classroom, police on patrol, and firefighters on call, all within the constraints of a no-override budget. So to conclude, the recent budget developments are certainly positive. However, I'd like to leave town meeting with a slight word of caution. First, our high school enters FY14 with an operating deficit of approximately $400,000, which is the amount that they use for V&D to cover the FY13 deficit. At the same time, enrollment at the high school is expected to rise. Second, we need to continue to invest in ways to stem the rise in out-of-district costs. Both SBS and LS have developed and continue to develop programs within our schools that allow us to meet the needs of students in district and lower the need for out-of-district placements. However, more help is needed from our state legislature to allow communities to plan for and fund such programs in a way that does not require permanent increases in our tax load. Lastly, while these are not part of the FY13 budget per se, we still need to develop long-term financing plans to address several items, including but not limited to our long-term capital needs for buildings and technology and our OPEB obligation, just to name a few. Topics for another day. Thank you for your time. Back to you, Mr. Moderator.
We'll now hear from the schools in the town, each of which will have 5 minutes with respect to their individual budget before we get into the general discussion. And the first speaker will be Town Manager Maureen Valente for the town.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Protecting public safety, public health, public assets, and a special quality of life, we speak of our core values, our mission. This is ours. We, the staff of the town of Sudbury, are here to work with our elected and appointed officials, with you, the residents, and our business sector to protect your public safety, protect all of our shared publicly owned and held assets and treasures, and to protect the very special quality of life found here in Sudbury, as it's been handed down to us from previous generations, and I know we hope to hand down to the next generation. I think the one thing that most people have been waiting to hear, although Chairman O'Brien gave an overview of it in his remarks, is what happened with the health insurance reform. So before I get into the town budget, I wanted to cover that very briefly. We did change to the GIC for FY13 under the new statute. There was a very different way of joining the GIC. Coupled with changes made in the last round of negotiations, it becomes a big game changer in terms of the finances for the town. Enrollment ended today, so it's difficult to have firm budget numbers before now, but we think we've put them together and have them here for you. Savings and final numbers still could change, hence there is a request for some funds to remain in the health insurance reserve line item. In terms of the overall picture, the overall cost reduction for the employer, the town of Sudbury and Sudbury Public Schools, ended up being a little about $202 million over what was in the warrant for the FY13 estimate for health insurance. We do have to pay mitigation to our employees. That was part of the requirement. We ended up with an agreement to pay them 35% of the combined employer and employee savings. That works out to about $850,000 to them. So the net left for the employer in savings is about $1.16 million, about $808 accrues to the Sudbury Public Schools, and $357 for the town. That comes fairly close to the help reserve estimates that we put in the warrant. If you look, we made estimates on what the savings might be, and we came out fairly close to that. And SBS will address their projected net savings and plans. I'll cover them for the town under my budget presentation. In terms of what we did with them, we budgeted the employer savings amount for augmenting reserves and setting aside money for collective bargaining. We put $75,000 into the health insurance reserve. This is uncharted water for us in terms of all of this. We felt it was better to put some amounts in that line for unexpected developments for health insurance. And then the $200,000 we put into the salary contingency. As was noted, we are entering collective bargaining. And some amounts are put into departmental budgets, and I'll address some of those for the priorities. The actual budget summary is on your handout there, and I just put it in here as well. There are listed where they are, but overall it's the amount that Chairman Rayo from the Finance Committee noted for the town. In terms of staffing history, just to put this in, take a look. We had planned originally to add one employee from the, we've reduced a number over the past few years, a public safety dispatcher. I'm here tonight to say we're updating that, and we'll be requesting two positions be created in the budget, and I'll talk about that in a moment. And the change from the warrant, again, on your handout, and you can see there, funds have been added for one more public safety dispatcher and also one more police vehicle. I talked about that in the budget adjustment article, the problem we're having with the vehicles. We added funds for stormwater consultant. There's be a new EPA DEP permit that we think will have pretty hefty obligations on the towns without necessarily regard for the town's ability to finance it. So we're putting money aside to be ready for that. As I said, for salary contingency, and there's a few more things, trees that I talked about, basically the items I talked about in the budget adjustment article, we've tried to beef them up a little in this to recoup some of the ground. My critical areas I want to be able to cover in my 5 minutes, combined public safety dispatch, if you follow that, we've tried to cover that pretty aggressively in discussions with the FinCom and with the Board of Selectmen, talking about the need for this and the new requirements. Stormwater, as I noticed, vehicles, public works, GIC, and trying to be prepared to address on the bigger picture at the time our OPEB obligations and other long-term challenges. So combined dispatch, I did want to focus on a little. We are being required a new state mandate, EMD, emergency medical dispatch, is being required for all towns as of July 1, 2012. It's not a quote-unquote unfunded mandate because the state is providing training dollars, but they're not providing dollars to hire more dispatchers if you're short of that. Two more minutes?
It's up, not up to me. Does the hall wish to give the town manager two more minutes to finish? All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, go right ahead.
Thank you very much. So there's requirements from that. It'll be a new organizational structure. And we can answer, and both the public safety chiefs are here to answer if you have more questions on that. But this has been something that's been planned and seen as a goal of the town for a long time. Impending stormwater permits, as I noted, we're going to have a lot of new requirements, and we tried to add money in the budget for that. Pass down of the vehicles, just to say we used to replace 5 vehicles annual, 4 marked, 1 unmarked, and we would put new marked ones on at about 75,000 miles. That's the drivetrain warranty position, which is why there's 4 a year. There was a switch from the Crown Vic now to Taurus, I believe, and that's just gotten more expensive. And so there's more money to restore back to that. Public Works, I've talked about adding back to those funding lines. Just quickly here, a recap of the prior years, the reductions we've made, again, from these areas and the staffing. And so the funding that we're looking here is to address those critical items, restore important backlog and reductions, set aside reserve for collective bargaining, and start thinking about our OPEB obligations. Thank you very much for the additional time. Thank you for your attention.
Superintendent Ann Wilson, to make the presentation for Sudbury Public Schools. This is the superintendent's first presentation at the town meeting. Welcome.
Our mission in the Sudbury Public Schools is to strive to enable all students to reach their intellectual and personal potential. We work in partnership with families and the community to provide the highest quality education to all children in the safest environment possible. In order to do this, we attend to the instructional core. The instructional core is the interaction between students and teachers in the presence of curriculum. You'll hear as I go through my presentation the focus on the instructional core and our focus at SPS on making sure that the interaction between students and teachers is the highest quality possible and it responds to any current changes in curriculum, changes in educational strategies that are research-based. Over the past several years, SPS School Committee and Administration has made tough decisions to make budget cuts as necessary to remain fiscally responsible given existing financial constraints. Sudbury Public Schools School Committee and bargaining associations negotiated in good faith 3 years ago and came to an agreement that benefited the town and the school system. During the past 3 years, we've utilized stimulus funds totaling almost $1,750,000 to address certain areas of the budget that had been previously cut. In particular, we addressed class size, professional development, special education, technology, both hardware and software, and the creation of a data warehouse and data teams at each school. We move into fiscal year 13 without the benefit of stimulus funds, and we're left with a system that has degraded our capacity to support teaching and learning, the instructional core, which is the very center of our work. Our curriculum infrastructure has deteriorated over the past several years, and we must begin to rebuild in light of major changes in the curriculum due to the Common Core alignment that we are required to do starting in September, and the implementation of our new educator evaluation system, which requires professional development, more time for our teachers to self-assess and provide portfolios of their work, and more time for our administrators to work with our teachers on this evaluation system. This evaluation system applies to all educators, including teachers, site-level administrators, and central office administrators, including superintendent. In addition, we must provide curriculum support and professional development so our teachers are able to meet the varied needs of all our students, those who require additional support to access the curriculum, and those who require additional challenge opportunities to expand on the curriculum. So now we present to you tonight our fiscal year 13 budget that is 3.35% over the fiscal year 12 budget. Our fiscal year 13 budget differs from the warrant in that it now includes increased state aid and anticipated savings from the town's move to the GIC for health insurance benefits. We have infused our budget with the anticipated savings in the following ways: increases to previously cut line items that support our teaching and learning and operations infrastructures. Specifically, we increased our curriculum program teaching and learning budget by $100,000. We increased our professional development budget by $75,000. Our curriculum technology equipment line item was increased by $85,992. Technology and training by $25,000. Substitute teachers by $80,000. And preventative maintenance to help us to continue the wonderful savings that we have realized by implementing new ways to deal with our utilities and other things, $52,675. And then our school committee legal fees line item, we increased by $25,000, and that helps us to deal with any of the litigation that comes our way. These are for attorney's fees. We added a line item, as you can see, that's different from the warrant for a salary contingency, since we are in the process of collective bargaining. This amount does not represent a specific anticipated cost of living increase. However, funds might be used for some combination of a cost of living increase and or compensation for other collectively bargained changes in the contract which support teaching and learning and enhance opportunities for all students. Finally, you'll also notice that we adjusted the line item for benefits reserve to $100,000. Since we now have a better sense of the costs of our benefits based on the enrollments that just ended today, this again, as you've heard already, can change, but we have that reserve ready to go. Finally, within the next two slides, I will review our challenges and provide some detail for the breadth of our needs. So in this slide, you see some of the challenges that we face. We have talked considerably about less than 2 minutes.
Does that receive the approval of the hall? Raise your cards. Those opposed, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. We have talked consistently about our achievement gaps, specifically in the area of mathematics for the subgroup of students with disabilities. The impact of the degradation of our curriculum infrastructure, as I talked about earlier, has really left us to the point where we don't have the resources we need, both personnel-wise and financially, to support the implementation of the Common Core and the new educator evaluation system. You can see we are addressing math in a way by bringing in mathematical instructional coaches in our budget for next year to work with our elementary teachers. We want to continue training on our technology, maintaining our technology and updating and making sure that we have equitable access to technology across our system. Professional development, as I mentioned before, I want to say one thing about data teams. This year we implemented data teams in each school. The purpose of the data teams is to utilize data on student achievement to inform instruction, not only to identify which students might need more assistance, which we already do a great job of, but to help teachers to inform their instruction to meet the wide range of needs in our classrooms. Quick word about Race to the Top. We are a Race to the Top district. We have received some funding. However, there is more funding necessary to help us to implement the mandates that all schools in the Commonwealth will have to comply with in the next 2 years. Again, I mentioned those two things again already, so I will flip to the last slide. I just want to remind everyone again that we did lose the stimulus funding, so we're moving forward without that to help us with the gap that is left by the funds that have been decreased and the areas that have been decreased over the past several years. There's a tension between being able to maintain class size and continue to improve on the instructional core. The variability of special education costs, as you've heard earlier today, is a constant that's with us and is a challenge. Data management, being able to make sure that we keep our equipment updated and we keep our people trained. And then, again, we are in collective bargaining in progress. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Superintendent Scott Carpenter for Lincoln Sudbury.
Good evening and welcome to Lincoln Sudbury. I want to share with you some of the factors that make Lincoln Sudbury special. First are the core values that guide our school. We foster cooperative and caring relationships. We emphasize tolerance and respect for differences. And we strive for a purposeful and rigorous academic program. In the end, we generate well-rounded graduates, ready for college, ready for a multicultural workplace, ready to excel in life. Second is a school culture that strives to personalize education for 1,600 students. Sir Ken Robinson wrote a book called The Element, How Finding Your Passion Changes Everything. In it, he writes, the key to transformation is not to standardize education, but to personalize it, to build achievement on discovering the individual talents of each child, to put students in an environment where they want to learn and where they can naturally discover their true passions. This is the type of personalization that describes Lincoln Sudbury. Lastly is the dedication of volunteers within our community who step forward in many ways to support the schools and our children. And I really want to thank Mark Collins for his 9 years of serving on the school committee and for his support for our community. So thank you, Mark. Despite some of the budget challenges, we continue to move forward with new initiatives. This year, we rolled out the Naviance system, which is an invaluable web-based tool supporting students and families in the college selection process. LS has long been known for its diverse offerings in humanities, and our students experience a curriculum in English and history comparable to that of many liberal arts colleges. The long-term economic strength of our country, however, depends on our schools also preparing students for careers in science, technology, engineering, and math, commonly referred to as STEM careers. From our alumni survey conducted this year, one-third of our recent graduates who are currently in college are majoring in STEM fields. Results also matter, and 12% of our graduates qualify for National Merit Scholars. We offer a wide array of extracurricular offerings. There are club and activity opportunities for all to discover their passion. And we have an athletic program that annually produces state champions. Students generally cherish their Lincoln Sudbury experience. And in the alumni survey, 93% of our graduates rated their experience as excellent or good, with the vast majority of these students rating the alma mater as excellent. Our enrollment next year is projected to dip slightly, and we are bracing for a significant enrollment jump in 2014. While our faculty size remains level, in this FY13 level service budget, the high school has lost 12 teachers over the previous four budget cycles, dropping our faculty from a high of 147 to 135. Since 2003, the high school has seen enrollment grow from 1,315 students to 1,587 students for next year. Yet the staffing is currently one FTE less than when we had 272 fewer students. So I just want to provide a little visual portrayal on how the school has changed over the last 12 years. I mean, this for me is sort of an important thing because this is when my wife and I both came to Sudbury and said, okay, this is where we want to raise our family. So this is what's been happening to our school in those intervening years. In any given year, we have small classes that are supportive because we've got children with significant needs, children who need to pass MCAS exams in science, math, and English. And while most children have no problem passing these exams, there are a small cohort within there are some children within any cohort that need these special services or smaller classes. In 2000, the average math class size was 18. And when interpreting average class size, understand that some classes are smaller to accommodate those needing extra attention and support. So by default, some classes are going to be larger than the average. But in 2000, few classes would have been larger than 24. By 2002, the average math class size had increased to 20. Average teacher load was 80 students. Some classes ticked up into the mid-20s to offset the small and supportive classes for those needing extra support. LS was a school that emphasized a supportive and personalized approach to learning, where students were connected to teachers both in the classroom and outside of it. By 2008, average math class size had reached 22, and many upper-level classes were being run in the high 20s. Personalization education was slowly becoming strained.
Scott? Can you let us know how much longer?
About 4 minutes.
4 minutes? Those in favor, raise your cards. Those opposed, go ahead, please.
Today, the average class size is at 24 students. We continue to run some small classes for those needing the extra support, which causes the typical upper-level classes to be above this average. Currently, college prep classes are generally running at 26 students. And students in our highest level classes and advanced placement courses are often in classes of at least 30 students. Even with a level service budget, at least one math class and one world language class will be run in the mid to upper 30s next year. Our level service budget uses a significant amount of money from reserves to avoid teacher layoffs. If I didn't use this money, many of the classes for the upper level students would actually be at 38 or more. The assumptions within this budget are that staff will move up on steps, but it does not include a cost of living increase for next year. Negotiations are in progress between the Teachers Association and the Lincoln Sudbury School Committee and will dictate any compensation adjustments. All known costs and expected revenues are included. State aid is set at the most recent House Ways and Means budget, and without the use of the reserves, there would be a significant shortfall in FY13. The reserves are being used to preserve staffing in FY13, but will not be available next year, or in FY14. The budget includes a significant savings on employee health insurance because of an agreement reached between our teachers and the school committee that allows the district to avoid $223,000 in costs in FY13. All total, this agreement provides $437,000 to avoid costs over the next 2 years, with our teachers shouldering the burden of these savings by incurring higher copays for medical treatment. In addition, this agreement better positions the district for future cost avoidance by increasing employee contribution towards more expensive indemnity type plans. So the punchline for this is that the total bill for Sudbury including debt service for the construction of the high school, would be an assessment of $20.8 million. In terms of the budget, 71% of the budget, excluding the offsets, is for the personnel costs of salaries and health insurance. And because of the savings in health insurance this year, these costs are actually decreasing. 19% of our costs are for mandated expenses in the form of out-of-district tuitions for children with profound learning needs. As a community, we are morally and legally compelled to fund these tuitions and transportation. 7% of the budget goes to supplies and materials, 3% is basically for the utilities. As Jim noted, there's an escalating amount of out-of-district costs that the high school has been incurring. To put this budgetary challenge into perspective, the $745,000 increase in out-of-district in the out-of-district line for next year is larger than what would have been be supported by Prop 2.5. And if you think about this, we've increased the out-of-district line by $2 million in the past 2 years, which means that we have $2 million less in our budget to support the 1,600 students who are educated within the walls of Lincoln Sudbury. To better serve the needs of all students, we have many of our regular ed teachers involved in special education professional development, and we are doing a lot of this professional development during the summer times. We're also seeking to hire a special education teacher to work on an initiative for children with language-based learning disabilities to be able to move some of these out-of-district students back in district. Jim had previously noted that we do have or qualify for extraordinary relief. We have a shortfall this year in FY12. The extraordinary relief we'll be receiving will get us to the point that we will almost cover that shortfall, but we will have a $17,000 shortfall that we'll have to use the excess and deficiency fund to mitigate. In terms of the cumulative impact on our budget with the reductions, we've had 4 years of reductions at the high school. We've had to reduce the budget or reduce 18 teachers and also reduce our department expenses by 30%. I think I have 4 more slides.
Approximately how much time?
3 minutes. I need to talk faster.
Okay, well, could you, why don't we move it along a little bit? Thank you.
So to put the loss of 18 staff members into context, that's more than we have within any one of our academic departments at the high school. So we've slashed department budgets and done whatever we can to save staffing within the high school. The issue really is that the level service budget makes it seem like everything's okay, but it's really not. The wheels are coming off the cart, and we're doing what we can to keep the cart on the path. Within the level service budget, there's $520,000 of one-time monies coming either from excess and deficiency, athletic revolving, building rental, that are being used to support the budget this year but will not be there in future years. And if we didn't apply these one-time monies this year, we would have had to lay off 8 additional teachers. So our community needs to understand that there's a significant funding cliff with this $500,000 of one-time funds coupled to a spike in enrollment coming 1 year out. And lastly, I just want to close with an explanation of, I would say, an initiative that really worked at Lincoln Sudbury. Back in 1990, there was an effort to get class sizes back to 80 students by 1990. So they called it the 80 by 90 initiative. And the high school was there through the 90s and up until 2000. And slowly but surely, things have changed. So I just want to close. I kind of talked about math before, so let's jump to science. In 2000, the science teacher load was at 80. An average class size was 20. AP biology classes were available to all students who wanted advanced placement. Our laboratory science classes all had 24 students in them or less. Many students were engaged with teachers outside of classes doing independent research. Jump forward to 2008, science teacher loads at 88. Average class size rose to 22. We only are able to offer one section of advanced placement biology, and there's a wait list. A few science classes are being run beyond the laboratory capacity of this building, which is 24, which is a safety issue for laboratory science. Picture boiling liquids, acids and bases, and a room full of students. And independent studies have largely vanished. Today, science teacher load is at 96. Average class size is 24. Nearly half of the science classes are above room design capacity. Safety concerns increase. There's now a huge wait list for a single section of AP biology. Many classes, both in biology and chemistry, have 30 or 31 students in a laboratory setting. Given teachers' increased student loads within the classroom, working outside of class on independent study projects has become a distant memory. Thank you.
Selectman's position, Mr. O'Brien.
We support the budget, Mr. Moderator.
Thank you. Does anybody wish to be heard on the limiting motion which establishes the upper limit of the budget? One moment. And just to understand, we're not going to be talking about the various line items here. We're talking about whether you're in favor of this $81,509,219 upper limit of the budget or some other amount. Yes, sir. Please stand.
Robert Abrams, 48 Horse Pond Road. Mr. Moderator, I have a motion to amend. I've given it to you. I believe it's ready for the viewgraph.
Okay. Actually, the amendment's easier than this. It is just to change the number from that to the number that you have in mind.
That is correct, Mr. Moderator.
What is the number you have in mind?
$79,099,861.
$79,099,861.
Correct.
Okay. Does that amendment receive a second? It does. Mark, can you get that? Okay. There you go. So that's what you saw a long time ago. So the Finance Committee has one number. This is an amendment to lower that to 79,099,861. Mr. Abrams.
May I use the podium, Mr. Moderator?
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Ladies and gentlemen, every year, our town, through the FinCom, as it's required to do, presents us with a limiting motion for the fiscal year's budget. Every year, the amount that's submitted is not less than 2.5% more than the amount of the prior year's budget. And that 2.5% is because of the state law that limits them to a 2.5% increase unless there's an override and a vote of the town separately from town meeting. In some years, we have had requests for override several times for increases more than 2.5%. But at no time in recent memory have we had a budget start out at less than a 2.5% increase. And I think that the process that we use to create this budget with a 2.5% increase is flawed. Last year, we learned about an unusually large group of special needs students who were leaving the Sudbury school system and going into the LS system. And if you recall the discussion last year at town meeting, the Sudbury school system did not seek to reduce its budget by $500,000 to reflect the fact that those children were moving out of the system. The high school had not planned, even though they knew these students were coming, had not planned in their budget for the $500,000 necessary to take care of that large group of special needs children. And we were told we had to have an override in order to take care of those kids. Now, we recently learned this year that $150,000 was found in a postage meter at the regional high school. We also learned that they found $227,000 in a dormant health care trust.
Mr. Abrams, why don't we stick to whether or not we should reduce the number to $79 million?
I'm addressing why we should, Mr. Moderator. Thank you. How does it happen that $150,000 ends up in a postage meter? I have a good idea how that happens. Probably about 20 years ago, a line item in a budget required $15,000 for postage for the high school. It was a number that they needed. Over the last 20 years, communications have switched from posted communications to electronic communications. Every year, the amount spent on postage goes down for the past 20 years. But every year, that line item in the budget goes, not only is the $15,000 still there, but it goes up 2.5%. And what we need to do to properly address how to budget for our town expenses is to go to a system of zero-based budgeting, in which instead of building a budget based on the prior year's budget plus 2.5%, we build a budget on what costs are necessary, what expenditures we actually have to make. And it's too late to do that this year for this budget, but the number that I've suggested for this amendment is the number that we appropriated at last year's town meeting for the current fiscal year, fiscal 2012, for the budget for this year. And I suggest that there are plenty of funds available to justify limiting the town budget to last year's amount. We found out, and we heard a little bit already tonight, about the savings in health insurance. If you look at the budget, that savings is not reflected in the budget. It was $6 million.
How much longer?
A couple of minutes, Mr. Moderator. A
couple of minutes. All those in favor of a few more minutes, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? Mr. Abrams, the vote was against you, but why don't you take 15 or 30 seconds and wrap up?
The money is there. There's $2 million in savings in the health care costs this year. There's $6.8 million in the health care trust. Now that we are no longer self-insuring, we've been saving money for years to cover our self-insurance obligations. Those are gone. There's $6.8 million there. And while some of it may have to be accounted for in other places, there's plenty of funds available in the town's checkbook for the town to do its business without cutting teachers or employees or any other services and limiting it to the fiscal 12 amount, the $79 million figure on the view graph. Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
Anybody else wish to be anyone wish to be heard? This is strictly on the amendment to reduce the $81 million to a $79 million figure, give or take. Anybody wish to be heard? I see no one. So we're now voting on the amendment that you see on the view graph. All those in favor of the amendment signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it's overwhelmingly defeated. The vote to pass does not receive nearly a majority. We'll now move on. Does anybody have any further questions on the $81,509,219 limiting motion? Please stand, and the mic will be passed to you.
Greg George, 39 Meadow Drive. Did I understand correctly that there would be a 3% tax increase to cover that would cover this $81 million?
Finance Committee, Mr. Rayl, or someone over there?
Did he say 3?
Yes.
Yeah, the 3% includes the calculation for new growth. That's the allowable growth. So it's the 2.5%.
Wait, Jim, could you repeat that slowly and loudly into the mic?
3%, it's actually technically 2.99, the senior warrant, includes new growth, which is the allowable growth. So it's the 2.5% levy capacity plus the new growth.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on the limiting motion? I see none. You wanted to speak? Could you stand up, please? Hang on. We need to get you on the mic to get you on the record. And if you could give your name and address, please.
Steve Lansendorf, 43 Hawes Road. I just wanted to confirm, Mr. Moderator, that that is indeed the correct number. I thought the number that we were really voting on was 82,999.
Mr. Rayl, could you look up on the screen here and tell us, is that the number we're looking at, 81,509,219?
Yes, it's correct.
So they do wish this number. If you look on the handout.
Okay. Yeah, just for clarification,
okay.
The number you're looking at includes
other
items. For Article 4, it would just contain the items that consist of the 81,509,219.
Okay. Thank you for the question. Anybody else have a comment or a question? I see no one else. All those in favor of the limiting motion, as you see on the view graph, please raise your cards. Those opposed, there's a half a dozen opposed. Everyone else is in favor. It's well more than a majority. It passes. We're now going to go on as part of Article 4 with the main motion under the budget. And, again, I recognize Mr. Rayo, Chair of the Finance Committee, to make that motion.
Let's take a deep breath for this one.
Excuse me?
Move that the town appropriate the sums of money set forth in the column FY13 no override for FY13 as shown on the view graph in the Finance Committee town meeting handout dated May 7th, 2012. The following items to be raised and designated by transfer from available fund balances and interfund transfers. From ambulance reserve for appropriate account to 200 public safety, $711,673. From overlay surplus to 100 general government, $26,000. The sum of $6,105,243 set forth as Sudbury Public Schools employee benefits to be immediately transferred and added to item 900, town employee benefits. Total will be $10,525,613 to be expended under the town manager to transfer $904,884 of the funds from item 900 to OPEB trust established to meet expenses for post-employment health and life insurance benefits for eligible retirees and to expend such funds for that purpose.
Does that receive a second? It does. We all remember what OPEB means, right, from the previous explanation about retirement funds? Okay. Do you wish to add anything further to that, Mr. Rayo?
There's actually another page.
Can you withdraw that second? Thank you. Keep going.
The sum of $100,000 set forth as Sudbury Public Schools Employee Benefits Reserve to be immediately transferred and added to, I believe this should be item 1,000. Can you confirm? Not item 100. I'm sorry. Could we change the view graph so that it reads to item 1,000?
Line 3, it should be 1,000 at the end of the line instead of 100.
SPS/Town Employee Benefits Reserve, so that the Employee Benefits Reserve total will be $175,000. To be expended under the town manager for the purpose of increasing the amount required for item 900 to the extent necessary for those purposes. Any balance may be expended at the direction of the town manager with the approval of the finance committee, subject to the provision that any balance of the funds transferred from the school budget and receiving such approval shall be returned to the Sudbury Public Schools budget. Now I'm done.
Does that receive a second? It does. Did you wish to add anything further, Mr. Rayo?
No, Mr. Moderator.
Does the selectman wish to add anything further?
No, thank you, Mr. Moderator.
Very good. We will now use the same procedure that we've used for the last two decades. I will start by reading the budgets in numerical order by title. If anyone has a motion to amend or a question, just raise your hand. For example, I will say 200 public safety. Does anyone have a motion to amend or a question involving 200 public safety? If someone has a motion to amend, it should be in one of two forms. I move to amend 200 public safety to the sum of X and to reduce, for example, 600 culture and recreation to the sum of Y. Usually those two will balance. The second number can actually be greater, but the first number cannot be greater, and that's because of the limiting motion that we just voted. So we will not simply accept a motion and a move to amend to increase a line item because we've already voted the limiting motion. We will debate and vote on any motion to amend. We will arrive at the end of this process with a main motion as it may be amended, and we will then vote on it. So I'm looking at three different pieces of paper, so if I misspeak, Finance Committee, you'll be sure to correct me. Is there any motion to amend or a question involving line 300, Sudbury Public Schools net? Please stand and give us your name and address for the record.
Martha Cole, 14 Churchill Street. We have new numbers that are going up on the screen, and I wasn't flipping my papers fast enough. There was a number of 175,000, okay? Now we've got 300 SPS Employee Benefits Reserve 2. That's 100,000. And down on line 1,000, we have $75,000. Was the 175 that was on the screen, I thought we were talking about line 1,000. Was the what was the number for the 1,000 line 175, or was it 75,000?
Finance Committee?
The total is 175.
The total is 175, but it is split between 100,000 on line 300 and 75,000 on line 100, line 1,000?
That's correct.
Okay.
Anybody else wish to be heard on line item 300, Sudbury Public Schools net? I see none. The next one is SPS Employee Benefits. Anybody have a question or comment? No? Oh, sorry, could you stand, please? There you are. Thank you. If I can't see you because of the lights, just shout out like that. It was on when you got it.
Miller to Candlewood Circle. Question about the mitigation. Now, I guess several people could answer this. There's a mitigation fund for health benefits because of the teachers joining the GIC. Number one, what's the number? Number two, is that a one-time payment to the teachers? I think that's it.
Maureen Valente, town manager.
Thank you. Yes, if I understood the questions, Yes, $850,000 is the total mitigation amount to be distributed equally among the SPS employees and the town employees who are signed up for health insurance for FY13. It is a one-time amount, and it is a mitigation payment is required by the statute. The initial amount required is 25%. We agreed with the employee committee to make it 35%. So that's where that amount comes out, $850,000 and one time.
Thank you.
Anything else on SPS employee benefits? I see none. Next is SPS employee benefits reserve. Next is LS operating assessment net. Please stand.
Brian Temple, 15 Revere. The recent Supreme Court ruling saying that Lincoln has been underfunding LS, will we be going back to 1993, I think, when that law was originally passed, and attempting to reclaim that money is the first question. And the second question is that because we now have to change the funding mechanism, will that require us to open the Lincoln-Sudbury Regional Agreement?
Anybody have an answer to that over there?
I will. It's my understanding that we cannot go back beyond this current FY13, but I will defer to other members, specifically the Lincoln-Sudbury School Committee, who may be more familiar with that, but that's what I've been told. In terms of my understanding of needing to open up the regional agreement to do this, actually the statutory method is the default method that must be used to calculate assessments for regional school districts. We could choose to adopt a different method, but it requires affirmative vote of town meeting from both towns to and we'd have to do that annually to approve that.
Okay. That answer the question? Okay. The next we have is LS debt assessment. Anybody? Okay. Then we have LS E&D. I always forget what that stands for, but I'm told it's the akin to the town's free cash account. Excess and deficiency. Strange name. Anyone? Okay. Minuteman Regional Assessment. Anybody have any questions about that? Okay. And other regional school assessments, which is no category, so I assume no one has any question. There's no money there, unless someone has a question. Next, we're on to general government. Yes, sir. Stand, please. When you have a question or a comment, when you raise your card, if you could also stand, that would help me see you and also help the Boy Scout get the mic over to you.
Robert Cove, 14 Churchill Street. I hope this is the right place to ask this question. What I saw go by in the original motion, is there really a line item called ambulance reserve for appropriate account? That has a whiff of a typo about it, or did my eyes deceive me as that motion was posted?
Ms. Lente?
It is a typo. It should have been appropriation. Thank you for catching that.
For the person who made the motion, Mr. Rayo, is it okay if we change that? And the person over here
absolutely
made the second, is that okay with you? We're all set. Thank you for pointing that out. Could you please make the appropriate change? Anyone else on general government? 100. Nope. 200, public safety. 400, public works. 500, human services. 600, culture and recreation. 900, town employee benefits. 900, townwide operating and transfer. 1,000, SPS/town employee benefits reserve.
And lastly, 700 town debt service. I see none. It's time to vote on the main motion. Can we get the main motion back on the screen, please? This is a majority vote, like the last one. Okay, can you move through that slowly, please? Okay, all those in favor of the motion from the main budget, as you see on the view graph, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it actually passes unanimously. Okay, we're going to move on to Article 6. Is that moving too quickly? Yes, 5. Thank you. And who do we have making the motion under Article 5? The motion? Go right ahead. Identify yourself, please.
Ted Fednishin, Chairman of Sudbury's Capital Improvement Planning Committee. And do we have a motion up there?
He's putting it up now.
Okay.
Article, there we go. You want to read that?
Actually, I just prefer to move in the words of the article.
No, actually, you're going to read it.
I have to read it.
Yes.
Very wonderful, so I will read it. Move to appropriate the sum of...
He's reading what's on the screen. Go, get close to the mic.
Move to appropriate the sum of $569,312 for the purchase or acquisition of capital items, including but not limited to capital equipment, continuing payments of existing lease purchases, construction, engineering, design, and renovation to buildings. Said sum to be raised by a transfer of $9,800 from capital budget Article 5 of the 2009 annual town meeting, by transfer of $7,091 from the capital budget Article 5 of the 2011 annual town meeting, and the sum of $552,421 to be raised by taxation. The sum of $55,000 to be immediately transferred and added to item 300, Sudbury Public Schools, net appropriated under the FY13 no override column of Article 4, FY13 budget, to allow the purchase of equipment hereunder by entering into lease purchase agreements, and to authorize the town manager to allocate funds between the underlying departments as needed.
Does that receive a second? It does. Sir, for a presentation?
Yes, please.
Then just briefly, as I recall, the warrant talks about two-thirds vote if borrowed. There is no borrowing here, so it'll be a majority vote. And were you prepared to explain the differences between what the motion is?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
We're going to make one small change here. That should be 552422.
Could you speak into the mic while you're talking to Mark?
Certainly. Getting a change on the last bullet point on this slide, and I'm fixing a math error.
Yeah, speak into the mic. Get it closer.
Okay, thank you.
Hang on a second. Was there a number just changed on that slide?
Yes, there was.
Great. What was the change? Can you tell the rest of us? Was it the change in the hundreds of dollars?
There was a typo on this slide that I corrected.
And the change was an additional few hundred dollars? Is that correct, Mark? What's that? Was the motion changed?
No.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. get started now. My name is Ted Fednishin. I'm chairman of the Capital Improvement Planning Committee. Second slide. Capital Improvement Planning Committee studies proposed capital projects and improvements to major tangible assets of the town. They must have a useful life of at least 5 years, a single year cost of $10,000, or a multi-year cost of $100,000. The committee held hearings in December of last year, deliberated in early January, and unanimously recommends a capital budget for FY13. Current members are listed here. Myself as chairman. I will make one small announcement right here. Two of our members have left the committee after their terms expired. We do have openings for those of you that are very interested in Sudbury's financial situation. We do welcome you to apply to the committee. Next slide. The FY13 capital budget, as listed in Article 5 of the town warrant, is funded out of the town's operating budget. It's often called the cash capital budget, as there is no borrowing included. Last year's FY12 was $538,000. This year, we have a target from the FinCom of $522,000, an increase of $13,500 from FY13. This is not the only capital that the town will request at this town meeting. As far as a capital cash budget, we actually received requests from the town of over $1 million. There were other capital requests from the town, totaling a figure of $486,000. As I mentioned, the capital budget that we're targeting right now is a very small amount of the total capital budget. We needed to eliminate, just from a cash capital budget, $456,000. And through our deliberations, we have reach that target number. Next. These are just very briefly. I'm going to talk about other capital items, and again, very, very briefly. There's a number of other capital items that we reviewed at a March 7th meeting. We do have recommendations on those that have come forth in various articles. I will not be addressing those right now, but we'll be speaking on those during the appropriate article. Next slide. For FY13, one of our major costs are DPW, P&G ongoing leases. This has been a continuing capital budget item for the last several years. It is the town often enters into a five-year lease purchase agreement for the purchase of very large or very costly, I should say, items for DPW at the end of 5 years. The town owns those items, and since many of those cars and trucks have useful lifetimes of up to 20, 25 years, it's actually a very good way to maintain a fairly modern fleet. After, of course, the five-year lease period, the town owns them. One small note is John Deere Lancey tractor. Half of that is coming out of the article. The other half is coming out of an enterprise fund. Next slide. We also had a number of requests for new vehicles for a DPW. Of those new vehicles, the committee has recommended supporting three of them. A replacement for a 1984 Bombardier tractor. These are the tractors that plow your sidewalks in the winter. A new sander replacement. And finally, not entering into a lease, but actually converting a sweeper that we have that is not used very often into a general purpose vehicle. It's a one-time payment of $50,000. Next slide. Looking at police and fire, there are a number of items that were requested. Many of them relate to the combined dispatch center. Of those items, $61,000 for a radio base replacement. This is a requirement, actually. The one we currently have is getting very old, no longer can be effectively repaired by the manufacturer. That money is not coming out as capital budget, but instead was purchased out of FY12 funds. We also have IP phones and fire alarm warning system that were required. That price was reduced substantially from the $44,000, in part by moving DPW phones from the DPW into the fire department. We also approved or supported a car 2 replacement. And finally, excuse me, get one back to that. One item that, again, is not part of our article.
That's five. Nope. Keep, is that five? Keep going.
Okay, thank you. That one that was not part of our article is $22,000 for a FEMA coverage grant. It's a very large grant, $216,000 the town needs to make a $22,000 payment for. This originally came before our committee. It's now going to be the subject of Article 15, which is a revote of funds previously approved by town meeting to purchase a fire station around Route 20. That light was never put in because of a rather large cost associated with the quote, and we do support revoting those funds. Next slide. We've also have some items for the town SPS. Various building improvements. Our original request was $35,000. We increased that in part to cover some items of that were required because of a safety order at our fire stations. We think that's a very good use of the funds. The multifunction copier was actually, again, purchased out of operating funds. There is a townwide plan in place for a major upgrade of townwide communications. We talked previously about the fire upgrade. We also are looking at new phone system for DPW in the library. The library phone system, we're only asking for $9,800. The rest will be actually given as a donation by the Friends of Goodenough Library. And finally, one item for the Norris School system, which is a gear replacement. Original request was $65,000. We support $55,000. The difference coming out this year is operational funds. Finally, last slide, just to summarize. If we take a look at and adding everything else up, we are actually requesting $569,312. That is somewhat above the target value given to us by the FinCom. That would come from $552,421, which is the Finance Committee recommendation, as well as $16,891 from revoting unspent funds from previous capital items. The CIPC unanimously recommends approval of Article 5.
Chuck Woodard, Finance Committee.
That Finance Committee supports the article.
And we have Larry O'Brien from the Selectmen.
Selectmen unanimously support.
Selectmen also support. Any discussion on the CIPC budget, the capital budget? I see none. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes unanimously. We're going to move on to Article 6 now. Do we have someone for a motion on Article 6?
Right here. Move to appropriate the sum of $297,461 for the Transfer Station Enterprise Fund for fiscal year 13, and further to authorize use of an additional $20,062 of Enterprise Fund receipts for indirect costs, such sums to be raised by $317,523 in receipts of the Enterprise.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Woodward? Of the Woodard of the Finance Committee for a presentation.
The Finance Committee supports this article.
Okay. Selectman, Mr. O'Brien?
Yes, Mr. Moderator, we support as well.
Okay, both support. Discussion on Article 6. Anybody wish to be heard? I see none. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it is a unanimous vote. We're going to move on to Article 7. And that is also what, Mr. Woodard?
That's me. Move to appropriate the sum of $516,197 for the Pool Enterprise Fund for fiscal year 13, such sum to be raised from $515,000 in receipts of the Enterprise and use of retained earnings of $1,197 of the Enterprise, and further to authorize the use of an additional $64,441 appropriated under account 900, fiscal year 13, town employee benefits for indirect costs.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Woodard?
The Finance Committee supports this article.
Selectman, Mr. O'Brien.
We support as well, Mr. Moderator.
Any discussion on Article 7? I see none. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes unanimously. We're going to move on to Article 8. Mr. Manassian, Mark Manassian from the Finance Committee.
Move to appropriate the sum of $217,260 from the Recreation Field Maintenance Enterprise Fund for fiscal year 13. Such sum to be raised from $189,000 in receipts of the enterprise and use of the enterprise and use of retained earnings of $28,260 of the enterprise.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Manassian?
Finance Committee supports this article.
Selectman, Mr. O'Brien?
Selectman support, Mr. Moderator.
Any discussion on Article 8? I see none. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. It passes unanimously. We're on to Article 9, and I see who's making this motion? Is it Barbara Chisholm?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to indefinitely postpone consideration of Article 9.
Does that receive a second? It does. Ms. Chisholm?
There are no unpaid bills.
That's easy. That's wonderful. Finance Committee, Mr. Manassian.
Finance Committee supports this article.
Selectman, Mr. Hardy.
Board of Selectmen support this motion.
Any discussion on the motion to indefinitely postpone because we don't have any bills? I see none. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. No one wants to pay unpaid bills? Okay. It passes unanimously. 10, 11, 12 are skipping over because they were all passed on the consent calendar. So we will move on to Article 13. Is the gentleman still here from Minuteman Vocational Regional High School? Mark? What's Mark's last name?
Chris Leota.
Mark Leota?
Chris.
Chris Leota. Well, I don't think it matters what his name is if he's not here. Chris, are you here from Minuteman Regional Vocational Technical High School? He is not. Okay. Mr. O'Brien, this is a regional high school, so rather than just passing it over, I'm going to ask you to make a motion in the words of the article.
So moved, Mr. Moderator.
Is that a second? It does. Mr. O'Brien, could you give us the opinion of the selectmen on the subject?
Mr. Hardy is designated for that.
Sorry, Mr. Hardy.
Mr. Moderator, the Board of Selectmen do not support this article. We have been discussing for several years now with the administration of Minuteman High School to work out a solution to the out-of-district tuition students that currently attend the Minuteman Regional Vocational High School. The percentage of out-of-district tuition students, I believe, has just increased from 40% to 43%, on its way to 50%. So in the near future, it's very likely that over 50% of the students attending this school will be out-of-district. And what that means to us, Sudbury is one of the 16 member communities of this regional vocational school system. So those 16 member communities not only pay the tuition rate for all of the students from Sudbury to go to, but we also pay all the capital costs. And our students of the 16 member towns are soon to be in the minority of the students attending this school. And all the other towns that send their students to this school that aren't members have no obligation whatsoever to pay any of the capital costs. They also, up until very recently, have been paying a lower tuition rate than all of the member towns. So the member towns, towns like Sudbury, have been paying a higher tuition rate to subsidize all the other member towns who, at any given time, could join and become one of the 16 member towns and could become a larger district, but they choose not to because it's not in their financial interest to do so. So we have been discussing with Minuteman and hoping that Minuteman would soon get this situation under control, and until they do so, it is not in our best interest to establish any more fund, which could go towards further subsidizing the capital cost that the non-member towns are not contributing toward.
Thank you. Again, I've asked the selectmen to make the motion to get it before you. The selectmen, as I understand it, unanimously oppose this article.
Correct.
Thank you.
That's correct.
Finance Committee?
Yes. The FinCom does not support this article.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 13? This requires a two-thirds affirmative vote. All those in favor of what you see in your warrant on Article 13 for the Stabilization Fund for Minuteman, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It is defeated unanimously. There are no affirmative votes in favor of this article. I'm sorry, I misspoke. There may have been a few hands in favor. Everyone else was opposed. It is defeated overwhelmingly. Article 14, Mr. O'Brien for a motion.
Move to indefinitely postpone Article 14, Mr. Moderator.
Does that receive a second? It does. A presentation?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Did I? I'm sorry, Mr. O'Brien, go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. We are going to take the opportunity to make a brief presentation concerning the Town Center project just for education purposes. It's our intent, as already stated, to indefinitely postpone, primarily for the fact that we feel this is one of the projects, as I had mentioned in my State of the Town remarks, that is worthy of going through the Strategic Investment Task Force review. So that it can be prioritized in terms of how it should be funded and what priority it should take in the long list of projects that we need to address. Everyone knows where Town Center is. It is the intersection where you have Town Hall and First Parish and the Hosmer House and Grinnell Park, and it is a unique piece of road engineering, to say the least. All right, so we have, since going back to the early 90s, there has been discussion about making some improvements, and the early improvements that were planned were purely as a roadway project, focusing on the roadway and not paying much attention to the historic details or the pedestrian movement through the area. And the selectmen delayed this project in order to highlight historic aspects of the area and attempt to preserve and enhance them in conjunction with the roadway improvements. In 2005, a study committee was formed, and over the past 7 years, with funding from the Sudbury Foundation, Community Preservation Act funds, and budget funds, the intersection has been engineered and designed to increase safety in the intersection for both vehicles and pedestrians, and to preserve the historic character of the area. And this is what the a rendering of what the revised repaired and improved intersection would look like. The design of the intersection meets the goals of the town, which were determined in several public forums over the course of its study, as well as it meets traffic safety requirements. The plans have the support of the major stakeholders in the center, including First Parish, who will be the most impacted by the new design. The intersection will remain essentially as it is now, with some tweaks, but only better designed and constructed to more modern standards. The project itself will include new traffic lights, which can be programmed. The current set of traffic lights are circa 1950s. There are really no parts available for them, and if you want to see total chaos, if one of those were to get knocked down, we would be in dire straits, because we wouldn't be able to make any immediate repairs. The lights do not have the ability to be programmed to meet traffic flow at different times of the day, so therefore this one of the upgrades would be to modernize the lights. To limit the visual impact, the plan would continue to keep the lights on the single type post as we currently have now. The committee was very clear about the fact that we did not want the Wayland Center look with those flying arms coming over the center, going in all directions. We felt that that was totally inappropriate for the look and feel that we're trying to capture in Town Center. Traffic lanes will be sized more appropriately. Curbing will be added to control stormwater runoff and eliminate the washouts that regularly occur after enduring a hard rain. Walkways and crosswalks will be added to better accommodate pedestrians and facilitate public use of the town center area, and materials will be chosen to maintain the historic atmosphere of the area, including the use of alternative pavement materials to delineate crosswalks and traffic islands. When this project was first conceived, as I said, with just being roadway improvements, the number of students that now walk to the noise both in the morning and the afternoon during the school year have increased dramatically, and there is a definite need for pedestrian improvements. If you've tried to walk through there, it's quite a challenge.
Mr. O'Brien?
Yes, sir.
Can you just give me a rough idea how much longer it'll be while you tell us why we should vote in favor of a motion to indefinitely postpone?
30 seconds, Mr. Moderator.
Thank you.
That's the look that you've got, 30 seconds. The bottom line is that we just wanted to take a moment to educate you on the fact that this will be coming back. We think it's a project that's worthy of a serious consideration, but as I said, we want to make sure that we prioritize it properly amongst all the other needs that the town has, and I thank you for your time and attention and apologize for running too long.
Joan Carlton of the Finance Committee. Do you support the motion for indefinite postpone or take no position?
We support it. Support.
Support the motion to indefinitely postpone. Anybody wishes to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone Article 14? I see none. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes unanimously. We're going to move on to Article 15 and ask Fire Chief William Miles to make the motion.
Article 15, I'd like to move that the town appropriate the sum of $22,000 and to raise this appropriation by transfer of $22,000 from Article 5 of the 2009 annual town meeting capital budget for the purpose of meeting a 5% funding match and upgrading to additional safety options for equipment to be acquired through a FEMA assistant to firefighters grant for funding for a new self-contained breathing apparatus for the fire department.
Does that receive a second? It does. Chief Miles?
The discussion here is our assistant fire chief, John Whelan, wrote a grant for some $216,000 to the federal government. We have received grants like this in the past. If you look around, you see the gear that our firefighters wear was provided by federal grants. Our thermal imaging cameras were provided by federal grants. So we're looking to replace the breathing apparatus that we have that was purchased in 1989. The grant that he wrote was for the 2011 federal fiscal year. John did a good job on it. It made it all the way to final review, but we were denied the grant. I did speak to the program director for FEMA of the Northeast, and the new 2012 grants, the applications will be coming out in July. They'll be reviewed over the summer, and then the awards will be made in the fall. So we're going to try again. So if we're successful, in order to take advantage of the $216,000, the town is going to have to come up with $22,000. Now, these funds were from Article 5 of the 2009 town meeting. I believe $25,000 was voted to install a traffic light at our Station 2 on Route 20. The project went out to bid, and the low bid was $60,000, which was somewhat different from the $25,000 that we thought we were going to have to spend. So we elected not to go forward with that project. So we're looking to have some support on this article.
Joan Carlton from the Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Mr. O'Brien?
We recommend as well.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 15? I see no one. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes unanimously. We're going to skip over 16 because it's been withdrawn on the warrant. We're going to move on to Article 17 and ask Mr. Hardy to make a motion.
Move to indefinitely postpone consideration of Article 17.
To receive a second. Mr. Hardy has informed me that he wishes to make a very brief presentation or none.
We move to indefinitely postpone this article. This is another one of these projects that we want to take under consideration as one of the larger capital investment projects that we're considering for the town.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee supports this article.
Okay, supports the indefinite postponement. Anybody wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? I see no one. Those in favor of the motion, shown in the view, signify by raising their cards. Those opposed. It passes unanimously. We'll move on to 18. And is Jim Kelly in the hall? Keeping in mind the time, the town manager and the building inspector are going to do a joint short presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move that the town appropriate the sum of $300,000 to be expended under the direction of the Permanent Building Committee for the purpose of constructing, reconstructing, or making extraordinary repairs to the Atkinson Pool and Roof Area Number 2 at the Fairbank Community Center / Pool Complex, and all expenses therewith, including professional and engineering, the preparation of plans, specification, and bidding documents, and supervision of work, said sum to be raised by transfer of the following funds. $72,559 from 900 Town Employee Benefits FY12 Operating Budget, Article 4 of the 2011 Annual Town Meeting. $27,441 from 200 Public Safety Building Department Fiscal Year 12 Operating Budget, Article 4 of the 2011 Annual Town Meeting. And $200,000 from 900 Townwide Operating and Transfer Town Reserve Account Fiscal Year 12 Operating Budget, Article 4 of the 2011 Annual Town Meeting.
Does that receive a second? It does.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kelly, our building inspector, will describe the project. I just wanted to open up with the funding and why it's here. I'd mentioned earlier the $72,559 was from the savings from that premium rate holiday. You recall I mentioned that under Article 2. The $27,441 is the amount that we appropriated for utility expenses for fiscal year 12 for the town buildings. And again, the mild winter generated savings in that line item. $200,000 is the reserve fund that the Finance Committee oversees. And again, we have been tapping that amount for snow and ice in excess of the snow and ice account. So these funds are available within FY12 to be reused for this. You heard Selectman O'Brien talk about postponing most of the major ones, but Mr. Kelly will talk about why we felt it was important, if we could, to try to get this project funded this year within available funds. Mr. Kelly.
Thank you. My name is Jim Kelly. I'm the building inspector for the town of Sudbury. I am here tonight to present Article 18. This project comes before you with input and assistance of the Permanent Building Committee, the Green Energy Committee, and the Atkinson Pool staff. We are pleased to be here tonight to explain the project, why we need to do it, and get your support. Basically, we are replacing a 25-year-old HVAC appliance that has reached the end of its serviceable life, as well as the roof where it sits. So the natatorium. It is a building containing a swimming pool. It's been funny, this natatorium word just came up, and I've been working with it so long I almost forgot that it was a kind of an unknown word. I mentioned it to my wife when I was going through some process, and she said, you know, what the heck is an auditorium? So that's what an auditorium is. It's not a pool itself, but it is the building. The Atkinson Pool Facility, great town asset, used by many people, young and old. It was built 25 years ago and is used 349 days a year. It opens up at 5:30 in the morning and closes at 9 o'clock at night. This project has been on our radar for a few years. Back in 2009, a DOER energy audit went through the facility and recognized that this unit could save $15,000 to $20,000 a year in energy costs. This is the pool. This is the space we are air conditioning. The HVAC unit we are replacing brings in fresh air from the outside, and it exhausts the moist, humid, steel indoor air. The unit also heats the air in the natatorium. The energy savings is created because the unit can remove the heat from the exhausting air on its way out and use that heat energy to preheat the new cold, fresh outside air that's coming in to give us indoor air quality. This saves energy that the boiler would otherwise need to create to heat up the new fresh outside air. The total cost of the HVAC and roofing is about $366,000, of which $66,000 is from the Building Department capital budget. We need approval from you to move these funds totaling $300,000 in order to complete this project this year. Partly from our mild temperatures last winter and our new boiler plant controls at Fairbanks Center, we've been able to save money on our gas bills. The opportunity to move the funds, as explained in the motion, will allow this project to start immediately without an override debt exclusion or town election. Hopefully, we can replace this unit before next winter, immediately starting to save that energy money. This is the unit, also known as an energy recovery ventilator. Problem with this one now is it doesn't recover any energy. The external housing is rusting. This is not just surface rust. This unit is actually disintegrating. There are no controls, no setback features. It runs at one speed 24/7. The new unit will also have controls that we can turn down at night when we're not using the building. Just a picture of the outside of the unit. As I mentioned, the unit is deteriorating. After 25 years of good service, it's wearing out. This is a picture of the inside of the unit. As you can see, it's rusting. This is roof number two. This is the roof where the unit sits. This roof will be replaced at the same time we replace the HVAC appliance. This roof is 2,700 square feet, stone ballasted over a rubber roof. It's also 25 years old. The roof and the HVAC must be done at the same time because the appliance is flashed into the roof, making it weathertight. This is a view of the steel framing under the pool appliance. You can see the roof has been leaking. It's always tough to do a timing of a roof replacement. You don't want to wait too long to replace a roof and have leaking and interior damage. However, you also like to get the most life out of your roof, as probably many of us have experienced on our own homes. Perhaps we should have been here a year ago. This is just another interior photo of the boiler room below the HVAC unit. This slide is just a slide that we became a green community. I want to mention this because Sudbury, as a green community, is eligible to apply for funds from the state. Recently, the Energy Committee did just this, asking for $250,000 for the replacement of the HVAC at the pool. We probably won't see that. There are 22 communities applying for $2 million. Politically, we are likely to see this money divided up and unequally distributed to most of the applicants. Our hope is that we receive some funds. If so, the total cost of the project will be offset by the grant. Hopefully in June we'll be notified. So hopefully that's a good description of the project. I hope you can understand the project, the urgency of the project, and I urge your support on this motion.
Doug Cohen, Finance Committee.
Finance Committee supports this article.
Bob Hardy, Selectman.
Board of Selectmen support this article.
Anybody wish to be heard on this Article 18? I see no one. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes unanimously. After 10:30, we finish this article. The choice is either to adjourn now or to continue, and it's up to you. Someone wish to make a motion? Before you make the motion, I'd just like to make an apology to Mr. D. Pompey. I was too quick. Your question was a good one, and I'm glad you asked it in the very beginning of town meeting. Yes, sir. Is there a second? All those in favor, move to adjourn to 7:30 tomorrow night at LS Auditorium? Is there a second to that? There is. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, we are adjourned. Thank you all for coming. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow night.
Raw data, so this is good.